We are Brightside.
Minutes ago, I was soaked to the bone because I'm moving lumber from outside in the pouring rain, getting it into the basement, and I'm like, it was crazy. So I was like, but I'm like, I just threw everything in the wash, put on something dry to sit down here and relax and talk to you, buddy. How you been?
Hey, I'm doing great, man. It's crazy, like you said. You know, just trying to get things done whenever you can, right? I mean, that's all we can kind of do, and. Yeah, I was out the other day. It's the same thing. It's been raining here the last couple of days. But we had a big storm about a month ago and it blew down 4, 5, 6 foot sections of my fence.
Oh,
yeah.
How tall's the fence?
Solid 6 foot.
Oh,
so, you know, 6 foot and maybe so it's actually probably a 6 foot tall by 8 foot wide section, right? You know, post to post. And then, but the fence itself is 80 feet long. And so like I said, so I had probably six sections, you know, that were in various arrangements. One section completely flat, actually broke, snapped the 4x4, clean through. Like I never really seen that before. So
yeah, that's some good wind.
Yeah, no doubt. So the fence, you know, as we moved in here last year, I already knew the fence was kind of wobbly. You know, you touched it and it kind of, kind of shook. So I knew it wasn't going to last forever, but I was hoping it was going to last longer than just, you know, the year. So I posted it in, but luckily they've got, you know, nowadays, I'm sure they've been there for a while. I haven't needed it. But basically it's this kind of U clip. With the spike down at the bottom, and you just put it right up to the 4x4, and then just with a sledgehammer, basically hammer it down into the ground. Thing works beautifully. So basically just creates an extra support. And I did that and then obviously re-screwed back in some of the fence posts because some of the slats had been moving around. But I think it'll get me through another year. So at least I can figure out what I want to do with the fence. Cause it's crazy, man. You know, you look at it and I mean, you know, you're right in the middle of building everything as well. But I've got, so the three sides of fencing, one side is 80 feet long. The other side is almost 120 feet long. And there's multiple like grade changes as it goes through.
Yeah.
So I'm just sitting there going like, okay, like I know at some point I'm going to have to rebuild this, but yeah, no cash to be able to do it at the moment.
Nope.
You know, so I'm like, okay, let's just get this bad boy put back up. And as long as it's safe and it'll last me through the next season, then I can figure out what I want to put up there now. So
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, man, it's interesting. And then my HVAC went out a bit ago.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So so probably 2 months ago now. And it's pretty much back up and running, but the builder of this place did this. It's an amazing system. So I love it from a tech standpoint. So, you know, typically, so it's a two-story house, right? So typically you'd often have, you know, two HVAC systems, one for upstairs, one for downstairs.
Yeah.
So there are two air conditioners, two furnaces, but they're actually, they work together. Okay. So it's considered like a multi-zone rather than a, you know, an upstairs, downstairs. And then there's a controller. And so in the vents in every room going through, so in the vent that's in each room, there's a bladder that basically inflates and deflates.
Yep.
And so there's a temperature gauge basically in every room. And so if it says that this room is at a good temperature, but another room is cold, it inflates the bladder so the air won't come into this room and just blows into the other rooms. So it's super efficient, but, you know, a little bit more costly than throwing in a new Nest thermostat like I used in my old place.
Right. Yeah. Cause each room gets its own thermostat.
Yeah. And then the controller for this thing is, it's a computer, you know, it's a whole microprocessor piece, and it has to inflate the bladders. So it literally has an air pump that then goes in and has an inflate and a deflate valve, you know, for each of these tubes going into each of these bladders. It's super cool if it's working. But for a while it wasn't working. And then the guys that originally put it in, you know, you can imagine in some of these, they do like two every couple years or something like that. So they just really didn't know what to do with it. So they're like, oh, call the manufacturer. I'm like, okay. So I call the manufacturer, great company. You know, so they're helping me out with it, but I'm like, well, you know, I'm not going to pay an extra $1,000 to an HVAC company to just mark it up, sell it to me when they sent me to the manufacturer because they didn't want to deal with it. And, right. So I got them to, so they actually sold it to me, and then their tech support was great. So I'm working with them right now to be able to get the final pieces kind of dialed together. But, yeah, was up in the attic, putting it all together, and, so having some fun, you know, all those projects that you didn't know were going to, you know, come in and then, you know, start jumping in and taking my budgets away from the important stuff, like my home theater, DJ.
I know. How is your home? Are you doing anything with it, or are you just, have you been?
You know what? We've been busy working on the other stuff. I've been getting some lighting to come in. And I've got another 120 lights coming in the next, probably 2 weeks. So I've got a big order coming in for that, so I can get everything swapped out. So I've gotten, some of my office done. I've gotten one or two of the bathrooms because I wanted to test, how the brand worked before I, you know, went all in and bought 100 pieces.
Yeah.
So I had bought like, I don't know, 10, 15 bulbs and different fixtures and love it. Like I said, it works great. Automations work fine, everything else. So just bought 100 new fixtures, light bulbs, everything else that I needed for it. And that'll go into about 90% of the house. So those are coming in, the order's placed. Hopefully, I think they just said they just got the shipment in, and then they've got to get it distributed out. So hopefully in the next week or so, those will come. And then that's probably a week, 2 week project, you know, getting them in and between things.
Putting all those lights in and everything. So yeah. You got to change the fixtures and everything for it.
Change the fixtures. So they do a couple of pieces in there actually. So they have a few ways to do it. So you can replace the bulb, right? So we're talking about a standard recessed, you know, in this case, you know, house is 10 years old. So it's a 6-inch recessed. A lot of times nowadays, if you're doing it, you'd have a 4-inch or a 2-inch recess, right? They tend to be a little smaller now. But these are all 6 inches. So there's two ways to do it. So one, you could just swap the bulb, pull out your old bulb, put in your new bulb, and all the controls are in the bulb. So as long as it has power all the time, basically you just use it's like a remote control switch, and it'll turn it on, turn it off, set your dim levels. And these are what you would call an RGBW. So they've got the red, green, blue, but they also have a white. So you get a true white. Versus like some of the RGBs that are out there, in some of the bulbs, it's RGB. So they turn on all three and that effectively
gives you white. Yeah.
But it's not 100% because you've got the red, you've got the green, you've got the blue, you know, so
yeah, it's not balanced correctly. 100%. It's not 100% balanced.
You know, and sometimes they, you know, kind of the diffuser isn't strong enough so you can actually see the LEDs and all of those kinds of things. So in this case, and then a lot when you get to, you know, even just a mid-level and higher level, they'll have a white, or sometimes they'll even have two whites, so a warmer white and a cooler white. And so that way it's just like a tunable white, you know, you get the color range, whatever you need from 2300 to, you know, 5,000-6,000 Kelvin. So warm yellow light to cool light. And then you also have the RGBs for all the colors. So I'm loving it. It's fun to be able to use. I'm getting ready to kind of set up and do some videos for, like showing in a bathroom, like, hey, you know, there's differences, you know, what bulb do you pick, right? You know, do I want a warmer yellow light or do I want a cooler light? Well, I know if, you know, I'm shaving in the morning or my wife's getting ready and putting on makeup, you typically want a cooler light, like 4,000, 5,000 Kelvin. Yeah. It's more accurate, right? It looks more like daylight when you're outside. It looks more, when you're at an office, but you know, do I want, you know, a 5,000 Kelvin at 3 o'clock in the morning when I'm just getting up in the middle of the night? You know, no, I want something that's nice and dim and warm, so I can go back to bed, right? It doesn't wake me up and tell me that it's like daytime, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning. So, it's, you know, it's,
so
it's,
what do you run it on? Like, does it run on like a, do you have it all on through Control 4? Does it run independently, but can be controlled by that?
So it'll run independently. So what I'm putting in here, and I'll have a few different things that I'll end up building out so I can kind of show some best, better, good different things. And so this would be my better. This would be, you know, I think it's great for the whole house, less expensive. And then, you know, at the top of the line, you have Lutron with their Ketra, which is phenomenal lighting. But you know, more expensive, $200 a bulb and $1,000 a fixture. It gets expensive for, you know, those of us, but not in that 1%, right?
But Brett, if you want your makeup to look good,
that's right.
That's what you gotta do, right? Guys like us,
you gotta spend that money.
You can't afford.
Exactly. You can't look like this without, you know, spending those dollars. But there's certain times, you know, in the family room or the kitchen where you really want that great lighting in there. Lutron does an excellent job. You know, and for them, it's like, you know, their color palette's bigger. They can dim down to 0.1%. So, I mean, it's truly like a candle flicker, right? I mean, it's amazing what you can do. And they can do 0.1% without flicker and dimming and all those things that normally happen to a bulb, right? And a lot of times we deal with LED, like a normal LED bulb, right? Forget color, forget all that kind of stuff. Your normal LED bulb, half the time you can't dim it lower than 10-15% because they're just so efficient. You hit that dimmer that you were using on that incandescent bulb before, and now it's like you barely see any dimming and then it goes off. And so, you know, 0.1% just means that, you know, they've spent the time in the engineering to really make sure that, you know, the processor and the chipsets that are in there are just tremendous. But this company that I'm putting in right now is called, this division of product is called Prolux, and they're under American Lighting, which is kind of their parent company.
Yeah, was that the
stuff that we saw when
Jennifer.
That's right. With Jennifer and CDS. So, like I said, as I had researched the stuff for, you know, what I want to put into my place, then, you know, that was what I really decided in there. And so, you know, great product. So it will work on its own. I know we're doing audio on this, but, like I said, I'll throw some other stuff out there as I'm creating some videos. But basically, you've got remotes. So it's a self-sufficient system. You can program it in its own app. They have wall switches, they have all those things so that you're able to, you know, be able to control it, both color, both and dimming, and presets. So it'll totally work on its own. At some point in here, I'll integrate it into what most likely will be a Control 4 system. So same thing, all those light wheels and all the colors and all the things that you can do in their built-in app also has the ability to be controlled through Control 4. So if you want to be able to tie it into an even larger system with your TV and your theater and everything else, you know, you don't have to have five different apps controlling it. You still get control. So that's, you know, that's one of the things that I was looking for is, you know, there's plenty of bulbs out there and there's some good stuff that works in that good level. If you were just trying to control a few lights in a room, you know, it'd be fun, right? For one room. But if you're trying to tie it into the whole house and have real automations going and everything else, you know, you want something that one has a great controller on its own, but then also has the ability to roll with, you know, Control 4 or Savant or Crestron or, you know, or even Harmony if, you know, for what works in there still.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
is this stuff like your, like when I was there, is this the stuff that's on the level of like the Hue stuff? Remember we were on that wall that it was these bulbs that was, it's a little more sophisticated than that, but it's in the same line where you can just get a bulb for a fixture or you could do this.
You got it. So yeah. So if you look at how you do it, you don't need light switches. You don't need this knot if you're going to use an app. But if you want a light switch, then they have a light switch, which is something that Hue hasn't done well. Hue offers a switch.
I'm running it right here in this studio. They have the little, I have the four-way flipper switch that you can program to do different settings for the studio. I do it for my theater, but you're right. It doesn't work as well.
It doesn't fit into a Decora. It doesn't fit into a standard light switch, right? And so, I actually found a third party one that does work. It's super
for
cool.
Hue or for Hue. Yours?
Okay. No, for Hue. So for Hue, so it's a third party, and I think it's called, I'll find it for you. It's called Clickless or C-less. I think it's Clickless. And so it fits into a Decora. It can be either a single button or two buttons. Mm-hmm. But it actually requires no battery. So it actually uses friction.
What the ones I have, it's that's like, the one I have is the four way and it's the same thing. And it's like, it's a toggle up and down and you can, each one can do two things. You can hold long and get it to do something you can do. And there's no battery and it fits right in. It works really cool. I was telling people like as a cheap way to manually to do your theater, cause you could throw these things anywhere. You could put one in your seat if you wanted to, right?
Yep.
And it's like, but it does work with harmony and stuff like that for Hue. But talking to like Eddie Troches and any of the integrators that I've had, that I've talked to, they're like, Hue's great for guys like, but when you really get into it, it's not as reliable as other ones and is not as easy to use.
It's not, you know, I've used Hue for years. And when I was running, you know, Harmony on the custom side, you know, we had, again, somewhere a couple hundred thousand bulbs, actually probably closer to a million bulbs, that were being operated. Right. So, you know, Harmony systems that had Hue bulbs. And so they're great. I mean, I've used them for years and, you know, typically what I did was, in most of our rooms in my old house, we had, you know, recess cans and those were running off of a Lutron switch. So Lutron was still my primary. I used a Ratu Select system, but in, each room had a center pendant, right? You know, like your classic. Mm-hmm. And so I put color lights in there. And so that, you know, in my daughter's room and even in the office, just like yours, when I want to throw a little color in there. The idea was you had that white, which is typically what you need, you know, for just normal work and lighting and things like that. But when I wanted to, then I could just turn on those Hue bulbs, you know, and toss a little color in there. And then in my front yard and my backyard, I used basically like torches, you know, so the outdoor Hue and loved it. I mean, I think it's great. You know, they put out good power. So you can clearly see them, you know, color selection is great, but I'd find that sometimes like my front ones would go out, you know, and I know I've got reliable network going on in there and even had a, you know, a mesh piece right over by it. And it would just, sometimes it would just disconnect. And I think to your point, when you're the person who's tweaking with the stuff, you don't always mind. You're like, right. You know, it's a little frustration, but, you know, we like actually fixing the stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, my wife just wants it to work. My kid just wants it to work. Or if you're a professional, your client expects it to work because, you know, in that case, they're paying you for it. So, I think that's where, you know, Hue, like I said, I give them full credit for a lot of the stuff that they've built. And I've used it in my previous homes and I, you know, and I love it as a system because it shows you what color can do in a nice, easy way. But when you start getting into doing, you know, 80, 100 fixtures, even those get expensive and don't work quite as well when you start adding in that many. Whereas a lot of these other systems are designed to be able to do 100 bulbs, 200 bulbs. You know, so it's just a different level, you know, and you expect it to work all the time.
And that's what I took away from it as well. It was that it wasn't that Hue was bad, but it was, it was almost like they didn't degrade Hugh. You know, they weren't putting it down. What they were saying is there's another level above that, right? So your reliability goes up. Your productivity goes up. Creativity can go up. There's a lot of things you can do, and it's, you know, getting back to the reliability part, it's more rock solid. You're like, oh wow, you know, like because so I have one, I have a Hue bulb, I have a bunch of Hue bulbs, but for instance, there's one over my sink in my kitchen. It goes out at sunset and comes on at sunrise. Sure. But if I want it on in the morning, like it's a dark, dreary day, I just take the switch switch and you turn it off, turn it back on, and it comes on full.
Yeah.
The thing has been in there for like 6-7 years. Rock solid. The thing, I've changed more regular bulbs around the house. This thing is, that's the other part, is they're more expensive, but they last so long. Most of these bulbs. It's rare when any of these bulbs go out, right?
Yep.
I took a 100-watt version, put it under my deck. It's awesome. It's because in the wintertime, I mean, in the summertime, you could change it to yellow so the mosquitoes aren't attracted to it. It's a colored bulb, whatever. I close in my deck in the winter and turn it into a woodshed. And now for some reason, it's like I want the light to go on, but I don't want to pull up my phone or anything. I hit the switch. It won't go on or off. It stays off. And I'm like, why? All the other bulbs have worked for me. One bulb won't do that. And I'm like, it's a pain in the ass. So I'm like, I got to go, like I come home from hockey and the light's out and I'm like, ah, crap. I got to get my phone out and turn this.
Yeah. Now you're trying. Well, and now, I mean, this is why people get frustrated. Cause it's like, it's not just like unscrew it, screw it in or flip the switch again. It's like, oh no, now I got to get it back on the network and now I got to go do this and that. And you know, now I got to go discover it again and, you know, or delete it off to put it back on. And, you know, it's more complicated. And I think that's the big piece to it is it's great. It gets you to play with lighting. It gets you to do this and that. And if you've got a couple of them, you know, you don't mind. But imagine that with, I mean, realistically, I'm putting in, by the time it's done, probably close to 150 bulbs each that are, you know, effectively a smart bulb like that. You know, if 10% of those were going out on a semi-regular basis, you know, you're going nuts trying to fix this stuff. And you know, I'd be just hearing it from the family, because the porch line won't go on or the this or that won't go on, you know? So I think that's the thing. And that's the level with Lutron as well, right? Like, you know, do I need it to go to 0.1%? No. Probably not. How often am I going to use that? No. But the idea is that they've overbuilt these things, you know, and I'll use overbuilt in a positive way in this. You know, it's like reliability, right? It's my 911, you know, it's overbuilt, but that means it should get 200,000 miles out of it and I can, you know, run it hard and I don't have to worry about it. You know, same thing here. It's like they've built this thing the right way so that, you know, if they can go down to 0.1% with no flicker issues and no issues whatsoever, you know, it can go down to 5% and 2% and 1% and you're never going to have a problem. You know, and they use what I believe they call Clear Connect X. So they use a different bandwidth on it that just is far more reliable. You know, think of it like, it's like your garage door is the easiest way to say it.
Yeah.
So usually we're used to things operating on a 2.4 gig or a 5 gig, right? And so there's more speed to that. So if we're talking about video data and things like that, you need the extra speed. But the lower in the frequency range you go, you can't get as much data, but you can go a lot further. It goes through the walls easy. It goes, you know, so rather than using, you know, a 2.4 or a 5, they're operating somewhere in the 700 to 900 hertz range. And so just like your garage doors, you know, you can do it down the street and it's going to work. And it works just every time because it doesn't need a lot of data. It's just, you know, it's a control, you know, dim to this percent, change to this color. You know, there's not a lot of data packet that's going through there. So, and a lot of those end up working even if your network is off, they're local. you know, which is another thing to look at.
That's like important.
Hugh,
yeah.
And Hugh operates only off the net as far as I've ever seen. So it requires the internet to be able to work. That's one of the
issues. I don't think Hugh needs the internet. It just needs your network running, but you don't need exterior, kind of like a Kaleidoscape.
So it doesn't pull.
It doesn't pull from, I mean, if you want to access it from outside the house, of
programming.
Course.
So yeah. So if you want to program it, it goes up.
But I'm that's pretty the issue. Sure.
Yeah. You know, and that may be because I'm trying to think if it,
because the other thing, you know what else it is? Hugh also runs off its own hubs.
Yes.
So it has, it has a hub
there.
So instead of each bulb pulling its own signal to your network, it's the hub, which I also heard that people were saying that's what makes Hue a little bit easier, more reliable than even the cheaper brands.
Sure,
which
the W's and the,
Yeah, because to your point, it's like if you've got 200 bulbs and they're all got their own address, holy crap, that's pulling a lot off your network. Whereas Hue, it's like you could have 200 bulbs and it's all going to that one hub.
Yeah,
it's and that's one draw. So even when the network goes down, the hub knows what it's, you know, so.
Yeah. Now, the only thing I think that you have to do in there is once you get past, it's like 30 or 50 bulbs.
You need another hub. Yes. Yep. And I have two hubs in this house because I have one for the house and then I added one just for the theater. Mm-hmm. And I didn't mean to, but it was like I couldn't see it. So I just went and bought another one. I just wanted to do something.
I mean, you need repeaters, no different than than a home network. The bigger you go or the more stuff you have in there. And so, but you do get into these areas where the larger systems like this, this one with Prolux, I think it's like 200 something bulbs and you get into the higher end Lutrons. And again, you're talking about hundreds of, you know, products that can run off of one hub or repeater system. So, you know, those are the things that I think just separate. If you're only doing 10 bulbs, who cares? You know, there's a lot of solutions that will work or you're doing one room, then again, you don't need that many things. But if you're trying to tie it into your control system and you want to be able to do a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, there's something to be said. Like I'm looking forward to in the family room, in the kitchen, I'll end up building out some scenes where, you know, you press one button and all the lights come on, but maybe at varying different levels. And some of the lights are still more, you know, warmer. So they're in the, you know, 3000 Kelvin range, but the ones right above the kitchen countertops, because if you're working there, it's task lighting, you know, maybe you're at the 4000 Kelvin range. And you can do that with the press of a button and then press one more button when it's time for dinner and they all turn warm or they all turn cold or, you know, so there's so much cool stuff you can do with lighting now that, you know, I know we've talked about this and I've always said, you know, if you need any help, but like if you're building a house now or moving into a house or remodeling a house, I think you got to do this stuff. You know, we're running off the same 50-year-old dimmer technology. You know, and recessed cans and house design has changed. You know, we're showing off materials on the wall and, you know, different materials that are on the, you know, fireplaces and this and that. We've got cans that are designed to get a certain amount of wattage or light, lumens, lux, however you want to look at it, onto the floor, you know, and that's how they design a room. Like you're spreading out the cans so that they hit the floor evenly. Right. So you have good even light, which is important. But, you know, what does that do for the piece of art that you have on the wall? Cause it's like, it's meant to shine onto the floor and, you know, and are they bright enough or, you know, like the main issue I think we've talked about here before. So there's about 100 to 120 switches, only two dimmers in the whole house.
Yeah. You said that.
Yeah.
Like what happened?
Every room,
didn't you say the guy was an electrician?
You know, he's a builder, a designer builder. So he designed and built the house that he was living in for 10 years. And it's like, you know, for the mild difference between, you know, adding a dimmer switch and a regular switch when you're probably, like you said, you know, you're a contractor, you're buying it at cost anyways. How do you not put a dimmer in these rooms that have 4, 6, 8 bulbs in them? And everything is either just super dark or just blindingly bright. So yeah, you know, I mean, these are things that I just, you know, I'm going to end up, like I said, I'm building out some videos now. I have some before shots and then as soon as these lights come in, then I'm going to build out the afters. But the idea is just to show people like, hey, look, you should be paying attention to this because this is a big thing. You know, you're going to build your house. It's your wiring in your house. And, you know, and you can frankly wire your house a lot easier now because you don't actually have to worry about which switches are running to which bulbs and what's going where.
Yeah.
You just need power because they're always on and then they're just cutting their own power as they're not being used. So,
right.
Well, so,
Eddie had a scenario where you do run it conventionally, but it was weird how he explained it, but it made sense. He goes, cause you always want to have that rock solid. The switch will still do something, but the switch is working in conjunction with the bulb as well. So that it is still getting power, but even if all not power went out, obviously, but if the network, everything just crashed, it still works like a regular switch, right?
Yeah.
Which I really like to hear that. And it's like, I need something like that. It's like, I had a Patreon chat, yesterday and we were talking about soundproofing my theater and, Paul, who's the sound engineer in over in England, he's been the day and a half before he had been like suggesting things for me to do. And every time he suggested something, I was like, oh, I'm doing this. And he was just like, holy crap, you're ahead of the game, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm only saying that to say this. It's that this is the stuff I've been doing this for 30 years. I've been dreaming about doing things just like you. Sure. And it's like, so like, how do you do that? Now, when you're building the house, I'm soundproofing my room that would cost people like tens of thousands of dollars to do.
Sure.
But when you don't have a room and you have to build it anyways, it's actually cheaper to do it like the room, the way I'm doing it, as opposed to, if you wanted to soundproof a room, you need to get the, you know, resilient channels. You need to get all of this expensive proprietary stuff to help you soundproof a room that's already in a house.
Yeah.
I'm doing it cheaper because I'm doing it first. It's the way it's designed.
Yep.
The same with the electrical stuff. That's why I'm trying to get like as much information from, obviously I've talked to you, talking to Eddie, talking to people. Cause I'm literally, while we're speaking, my electrician is texting me because we're getting ready to do the walkthrough and stuff in the next couple of weeks. So it's like, it's expensive to convert a house, but it's minimal cost to do it right the first time.
Yep. No, I agree.
As opposed to just what the normal would be like, just give me what I got to get in, right?
Yeah.
It's a few bucks more just to do this switch instead of that switch. Oh, well, okay.
And that's the thing, right? You know, especially if we're just talking about dimmers or we're talking about this and that, you know, $5 a switch, you know? I get that that's $500, you know, if you got 100 switches in the house, but $500 in the grand scheme of building your house is nothing, you know?
Yeah.
Same thing with putting in the bulbs, putting in this and that, you know, $30 a bulb versus $3 a bulb. I understand that it's more expensive, but what you're getting out of it on a bulb that's actually going to last. How many times have you bought? I know I do them all the time. You know, you buy an LED bulb that's supposed to last 25,000 hours, you know, 20 years, and like you replace it 2 years later.
Has it been 20 years already?
Yeah.
It's like,
wow, that one died super fast. You know, but you're replacing it or the color's not right or the this or the that, you know, and that's where I just go, spend a little bit more overall in your house price. It's still very minimal and you use lighting more than anything else in your house. As much as, you know, guys like you and I want to talk about, you know, what we invest in our theaters and, you know, what we put in there because we're going to enjoy it. Even we use lighting. More than we used our theater.
Oh yeah.
You know, all day, every day, right? You know, and so, you know, those are the areas that, you know, I think are going to become requirements. We've talked about this, you know, the next 10 years, this is what you're going to see. So you're either going to do it like all these people that, you know, when they're getting ready to sell their house, upgrade the bathroom, upgrade the kitchen, throw the granite in, and they never got to enjoy it. You know, they did it literally to sell it. And I get, sometimes there's ways where it's like, well, I'm doing that because I'm going to sell it, make my money right back. They didn't have the money for the years before, but it's like, if you can put it in while you can enjoy it. You know, don't put it in for the next guy.
I've known people to do that. And I always go against it because you like when you, So say you completely redid a kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever it costs you to redo the kitchen, you don't necessarily, you don't always get your money back or even make any money. You just, but in the meantime, you had to live there while your kitchen got redone.
Yeah.
You don't get compensated for that.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, whatever you decide to pick, the new homeowner
doesn't like it.
Might not like it. So now you're narrowing it. Whereas you could lower. Yeah. Now you didn't spend that money. Everybody's like, but yeah, now my house is worth more. Yeah. But your bank account is worth less.
Yeah.
So if you don't invest the money, you keep the money and sell the house for less. It's a push. So what's the difference? Right. But with lighting and stuff, I think you and I said this before. It's like 20 years ago, central AC, especially in this area, was a nicety to add on to your house.
Sure.
Now it's like AC in cars used to be a nicety to add. Oh. And now try to get a car without AC in it, right? Yeah. Same around here with houses. It's try to get a house without central air. I think this whole lighting system, the whole smart home integration 10 years from now is just going to be so commonplace.
Yep.
And you might as well, get your house up to order. If you're listening to us right now, we love upgrades. So that's what we're talking about. But yeah. I mean, I'm not saying run out and upgrade everything in your house, but there are ways to do it, ways to learn about it. And like what I've always, like I said, I've had Hue in my house for years because I just like to tinker with it. Like I have it. I use it for my Christmas lights. You use the little outlets and now it's like everything comes on when I want it. I mean, that to me is just like rock solid. But now as I'm building this house, I don't have to have those little tinker light, those little plugins. I want my outlets to be like that, so that I can control that outlet from here. Yep. I could, cause they have that. And it's like, why not just put it in the first place? And then I don't have to go out and buy the stupid, dongle to go in the outlet.
I have that chat with my wife all the time where. She loves to decorate for Christmas. And so, she's putting in all these little timers and all these little things or it's got a little remote, right? So it's got like these like little six buttons on it and it turns things on. And I get it. Again, there's tons of cool stuff that you can buy on Amazon that works for this stuff. But I'm sitting there going, put it on a Lutron switch.
Yeah.
Just put it on a Hue switch. Just put it on, all these brands are out there. And now you can control them all from your phone. You don't have to go looking around for this little remote or do this or that or tie it into your voice control in the house or do this, So now you can just, tell it to go on and it turns on or what I love, which is true automation. My porch light goes on every day. Like you said, it goes on basically at sunset and goes off. I have mine go off at like 11 o'clock. So, I don't feel a need to have it on all night, but a lot of people do from a security standpoint. Like I said, it goes on, but it goes on without fail. I don't have to remember to turn it on because my wife's coming home late or somebody's doing something.
Yeah.
It automatically goes on, and I love that kind of stuff, open the door and the lights in the next room go on, and then go off automatically or just all these things that are in there. I'm getting ready to program my lock. So all my locks are smart locks now in this house. So there's like five of them. And then, but you can set it so that every night at whatever time, so let's say 11 o'clock at every night, they all arm themselves. So if the door is already locked, doesn't matter.
It's good. Yeah.
It's good. But if it's unlocked, then it locks itself. That's nice. One of those things. Like how often do we forget? You try not to and hopefully, But it's like, why wouldn't I want my garage door to lock or this or that? It's easy enough to unlock, but if you want to do it or like my alarm system, so I use a Ring one here. So again, fairly DIY.
That's what I was going to ask you. I just got the Ring system. I bought the construction one.
I'm
literally, that's what I did that this morning. I went out, got three more cameras. My neighbor was nice enough to let me run an extension cord from his house. So I have solid power to it.
Yeah.
And we'll talk in a second about my newest toy that I ordered. And I just got an email that it got shipped. It wasn't supposed to ship till next week. And I can't wait to tell you about that one, but we got to stay on these light switches because I'll just tangent the bejesus out of you with this new one. But yeah, it's, yeah, I, I don't know. Have you ever built a house?
Yes.
Like what I'm doing?
Our last one we built. So we kept one wall up, so it was considered
right.
You know, not new construction. But
that saves you on codes.
but I mean, it was, if you were in the front yard, you could look through the house to the backyard, and we only had sticks up and this and that.
Right.
So yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So our last one was that. But it was about 2,000 square foot. So, you know, good size, but not, not huge.
Yeah. This one is, I mean, I think with my parents' side, our whole first floor is like 2,400 square feet. Yeah. So, and then, like we said, then I have the basement. But mm-hmm. what I was going to say is, it's a blast. I mean, I know I come on here, people know how stressful it is because you and I have talked money, budget. You got to do, I want to do this. I got to do this. I got to get money from the bank. People are asking for money. That's one of the things I'm going through right now. It's like, can I get a payment? I'll get money from the bank. But the bank's like, I got to do this and whatever. But geez, oh my God. It is just, it's like the biggest model you've ever built in your life.
Yeah.
Every aspect of it for guys like us, it's like, I think 30 years ago, I could have just flat out built the house myself. But now there's so many codes that you got to make sure to nail everything because I'm just like I wired my theater myself, right? It's like, I'm like, yep, go into the box. I can get into it. I can connect to the fuse box, all that good stuff, breaker box now. I have no problem running wire, building anything, doing anything, pouring concrete. I love doing all that stuff. So like every step is just so much fun. It's like I'm getting into the electrical and now sitting here talking to you, I'm like, oh, I just can't wait to, cause like I've already told Eric, my electrician, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be snaking. Like I'm going to do my cat 6A and run all that. I'm going to do my buddy Derek, my neighbor. He's like, you need help doing anything? Cause he's a trained electrician, but he's like, that's not what he does for a living. So he doesn't, you know, otherwise we just do the whole thing.
Yeah.
But it's just, there's so many pieces to it that it can't, and it like guys like you and I, where if you're doing it, you save yourself so much money. There's so much money from, you know, and that's why everybody looks expensive. And goes, you must be rich. No. Yeah. I just don't stop working.
Well, that's where, you know, when we did the last house, we were there for 20 years, but I mean, it was favor after favor. My father-in-law, who's a landscape contractor, we put him in as the GC, and then we used the plumber that he knows and the this and the that. And, you know, and like you said, you know, I wired every, you know, square inch, you know, of everything I could myself. So pulled a few miles worth of wire in there and built a nice backbone up in the attic that, you know, ran across for all my low voltage. And, and same thing here, like this house is built, right? So this house is 10 years old, but the room where I'm putting the theater in, I mean, I'm putting studs up, like I'm creating a room inside of a room, right? You know, and so I'm building all of that myself, you know, and then, installing and programming the systems and, you know, all those kinds of pieces that go with it. I'm putting in all the lights. So, like I said, in some of the rooms, it's as simple as screwing in a bulb. And it's the programming on the back end, but in a lot of them, you know, the typical old school recessed, it's just like a can and then you put the bulb in, but there's always like these gaps and all this and that, right? Well, the newer designs, it's all flush. You know, you've got this nice white diffuser in there. Right. That runs right to the edge. And then it's super clean. They actually have more light output. So like these ones can do like 1,000 lumens or something like that. Super bright light coming through that.
And what's the depth on them? You said that they're not, it used to be six inch.
So they screw in. So they screw into the old screw hole. So the can stays the same and this basically just drops right on top of it.
Okay.
So it's only 2 inches thick or whatever else. And then basically there's a lead wire and then it just has a screw in like an A19, your normal screw bulb. And then that just screws into the old one. So it's, you don't have to pull the can out of the ceiling. You don't have to remud anything or do anything else. And yet it looks like all brand new fixtures. So it's really kind of cool that way. So that's most of what I put in there because it looks a lot cleaner than just like the old style bulb kind of floating in the middle, where you could see the metal around it and all the, you know, and the other stuff. And then there's a few that I think are kind of like that for whatever reason. And then you've got like your center pendants and kitchen pendants where it's just a bulb, you know, a raw bulb. And so some of them are clear and some of them are frosted. And then they do a lot of tape light, which is what I'll probably end up doing in some of these rooms and in the theater, you know, so LED strips and all that kind of stuff. So there's some really cool stuff. You know, like I said, I'm excited to be able to play around with it a little bit more. And, you know, we'll end up doing some stuff like behind me where I have the wall. Then I'll probably end up doing some LED, you know, strip lighting and stuff behind that with a, the way they do these extrusions now. So it's like a full metal casing and then, you know, and then the lens, you know, diffuser basically sits right on top. It looks great. You don't see any of the individual LEDs. It's just a glow.
Right.
Go ahead.
Do they have ones where you can change, like one, you can pick a color, like Hugh, you pick a color, but you can't stagger. Like you can't, Jen was saying they do have one that's like, but it's super expensive, but do they have something that's like a little bit more?
So you can either have multiple colors in there or, in a lot of them, like with these as they get higher end, like they can chase, you know, so they can actually move, they can do different stuff. Because each LED is programmable effectively, you know, and so,
so you know, you start getting like,
it's a more complex program,
right?
But you know, so usually, but otherwise, you know, you can dial it in where it's like, here's a preset scene and you know, the left side's kind of blue and the right side's kind of pink and you know, whatever you're doing
or stagger red, green every 2 inches or whatever, something like that, like for Christmas or something.
I'm going to end up. You know, we always decorated and I was always hanging icicles and all this and that, you know, I did Christmas time but here, you know, my roof line goes up 30 feet in some areas plus, you know, and the pitch on the roof is pretty, you know, steep in a lot of these spots and they're tiles. So it's like, you know, you really don't want to be up there in the middle of the winter.
I was just on my roof yesterday.
So I think what I'm going to end up doing is putting up permanent lights. You know, and you see this more and more in there where, you know, again, you can get the nice LEDs. You don't even see them when they're off, right?
You integrate it into your trim.
Yeah. And so then, it's either, you know, either on the outside of the trim, some people put it underneath. So it kind of sits, you know, and so you don't really see it when it's off. And yet, you know, when it's holidays, whatever you want to celebrate, turn them blue and white, turn them red and green, turn them, you know, red, white and blue for 4th and, you know, pastels for Easter and then just turn them white normally, you know, if you just want to be able to light the house. You know, and so,
it connected to your Ring system and like intruder, intruder. That's right. It's like planes are landing.
That's right. So, but no, there's so much cool stuff that you can do with that. And outdoor lighting is, you know, indoor lighting. I'll end up building a few things so I can shine them better on the walls. But for the most part, I'm like replacing fixtures and just making it brighter, change things around. But the front yard and the backyard, they did nothing. And it's actually a little tough because they didn't even wire for electrical in most spots. So it's like, you can't even like easily get something in there. But, so I'm going to end up, I got to burrow under concrete and I got to do all this, not under the pathways to get it in. So it'll be a fair amount of work. But I love the stuff that I've been seeing. About a month ago or so, I was at the show called Lightapalooza. And so it's all about education on lighting. And I mean, just some of the pictures of some of the outdoor lighting jobs that they do. And we were out here. My in-laws were out here a few weeks ago. And like I said, he's a landscaper. And so we were putting in new trees. So we put in, we're putting in new trees in the backyard and all this and that. I'm like, oh, now I can uplight these and I can do, there's just so much cool stuff out there, man.
You can get as creative as you want.
Yeah.
It's insane what you can do. And it's like,
yep.
I mean, I love to do stone walls. I love to do levels of yard. Like I don't want my yard to be sloped. I want my every level in a wall and then level, you know, but within that, then you can do lighting. And yep. where I'm coming at this, again, much like I said with my theater, it's like 30 years of experience of knowing what I've tried to do here in this house and tried to do. Sure. It's like you run conduit all yes. around your yard and be yeah. like, even like I am going to conduit all the way around my yard for a wire dog fence.
Yeah.
Because there that go. Crap yeah, goes that. Bad, right? You'd be like, you got to go under the driveway. Here's yep. my conduit. And you're yep. like, you just do all this. And then what I like about it now is when I was younger, well, you're younger and you're stupid. So you hurry up and you do things. Yes, yes, yes. But now I know better. And I also am looking forward to, not looking forward to, but looking ahead to when I'm like 70 years old and I don't want to be digging a ditch to run a line. I'm like, oh, I know where my ditch, I know where it is right there.
Yeah. I know where the conduit is.
Right through, you know.
Yep. it's the way to do it. You know, it's like spend the extra little bit of money, spend the extra little bit of time. And when your electrician, because, you know, so many of these trades, and I get it, they're trying to get in and out. They're trying to do this and that. They're building to the normal spec. And they'll look at that. You know, I mean, I remember when I was wiring the last house. Really? You need, you know, cat to each room and you need all this and that? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Or let me show you this. This is a conversation I had with my son this morning. Let me pull up these images here. Actually, let me close this. I'll show you this image. So he texted me this morning and he's like, he goes, what else should I add? There add his work. They're adding, it's Borg Design. It's a manufacturing company. They have big contracts and everything, and they're putting in this room. And, I'll share the screen here. Boom. So they're building this room. You see, they have a, suspended ceiling and everything. Yep. But it's the electrician's coming in and they're like, what should we run? And I was like, he's like HDMI, internet. Blah, 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 all of these things. And I said, let me see where, close that. So here it is. He goes, we're setting up a new conference room before we put walls up and stuff. We want to run cables for the TV. Can you think of anything we'd want to run other than these? He's like power, Ethernet, HDMI, DP, USB, USB-C and coax. I said, a lot of that's overkill. I go, but I think it's got you covered. I said, make sure it's Cat 6 or higher. And, I go, you should also run a piece of conduit.
Yep.
Okay. So like, let me look at it. I'll show you the picture I'm thinking. So like, just say the TV's on this wall.
On that wall. Yeah.
Right. I'm like, just run a piece of conduit to a blank outlet right up to the suspended ceiling. And you know what he said? No, that my boss said, no, the electrician said that's too expensive. And that's what I said. I sent him a laughing face, right? And he goes, what? And I go, so we haven't talked about it since because you can't do this through text, but I'm like, the electrician is probably charging too much because he doesn't want you to be able to, he wants the call. Right?
Yeah, he's going to get the bill. Like, I mean, you got to replace the wires or you got to do whatever else. I mean,
if you just put in a piece of plastic conduit just so like even if it's plumbing pipe right just so you can have a guide that's dead end
drop you right where you want
right to where you want to go and anything you ever want to do you're going to run it through your suspended ceiling anyways and he's like
you can get it over there easy enough it's just
exactly
and it's like studs and the drywall at the last bit so you're not cutting holes.
Right. And I know my son will understand it when I talk to him, but his boss is like, no, we don't do something. But people don't understand like that. They don't understand like this simple thing and that, you know, I'll tell my son, I'm like, you can do it yourself and it literally will cost you like $5.
Yeah. No, well, like, that doesn't say it's $5 worth of Smurf tube or, you know, or orange conduit or, you know, whatever they have to put because commercial building, sometimes it's a little bit different, but you can put it. Yeah, you know, just make sure it's the code. But, you know, other than that, there's nothing that says you can't run conduit in the wall. And so, I mean, it's a way super to do important. It. You just don't know, you know, are you going to require fiber in 10 years? Are you going to, you know, I mean, or even, you know, that list is there. The only thing I'd say on the DJ is like, you're running Cat, right? So Cat 6, Cat 7, whatever you're putting in there, but run a couple of them. Because that's the other thing that sometimes you need one for Balin, then you want one for a TV, you need one.
Oh, the other one, the one he didn't have that we should, it's, fiber. Like you said, he didn't have that there. So yep. Yeah, you're right. It's like, you know, that was the other one.
And that's, you know, you're getting into spots now where, I mean, that room is a little harder, but you know, you get into these spots where, you know, once you're past 30 feet of HDMI, you know, once you get 30, 50, it either needs to be, now you could buy a cable now that's an active cable, right? So it's an active HDMI cable, often made with fiber, and powered on one side if need be, or using the 5 volt out of the source. But, you know, the idea is, yeah, I mean, all these things are changing. All these requirements are changing. That seems to get you a good amount of the way through, because now people are using balance for a lot of that stuff. Fiber does it even better. You know, and fiber's gotten a lot easier to terminate through the years, where, you know, now clefting it and everything else is actually relatively simple.
Fiber is?
There's a lot of cool tools. I don't play with it as much yet. I actually want to spend a little bit of time. I've got a buddy of mine, who does distribution for Clearline and a few other things, and, super smart guy. And, you know, the way they show how all this stuff works, they use a gel now, they do this and that. It's pretty simple to cut it versus what it used to be. And you know, the data throughput is phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing that, you know, that compares to it, but you used to need all this multi-mode fiber and all this and that. It was, you know, hugely complex. Now it's mostly all single mode. So it's, you know, just one fiber, you know, and a thicker fiber that goes through there. And so, you know, but again, you know, they make HDMIs with fiber now. They make data with fiber now. You know, almost everything you can get, has a fiber option. And I think, you know, running a conduit, super cheap way to future-proof and make sure you can easily run something through without having to knock all these holes in your, you know, in your drywall and repaint it and, you know, and everything else, when you can just drop it, especially it's just the last 4 feet, 5 feet, you know, especially if you have a drop ceiling. So, it's a blast to figure this stuff out. Like you said, it's planning it out. It's figuring out how you're going to build this stuff. And, you know, like I said, my theater, the room in a room. So I've got the back wall has narrow but tall window in it. So I'm going to actually cover that up. So I'm going to build a custom frame for it. And then we'll actually end up putting some fiber in it and then some mass loaded vinyl in it. Just to try to stop as much noise coming in as possible. And then I'm going to end up building out probably a 2 foot wall. You know, heavily braced and everything else. And then that's where my speakers will go, and then acoustically transparent screen, and, you know, and I want to be able to get back there if need be. And then on the backside, cause this room is like 40 feet long, and I want about 20 of that to be theater. So it'll be a relatively small theater. So basically to block off and split between the two rooms, then I'm going to build a 3 foot deep section that'll hold the projector. So then that cuts out all my sound, right? All my noise. Yep. And then for that 3 feet, other than the rear speakers, that'll be, you know, in that section as well. All the rest is just going to be sound deadening material. Yeah. You know, so, you know, when everybody always says, the thing is like, people are putting up all this like 1 inch, 2 inch foam, which does absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and especially in the low end, right? You know, so what, you know, once you're getting in past like the couple thousand hertz, once you're getting into, you know, 20 to 100 hertz, it just floats through those walls because those waves are 25 feet long. Right. And you need 2, 3, 4 feet worth of insulation to be able to actually stop it. So I'm literally going to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, why not? If I'm going to put a projector in there anyways, and I'm going to do this and that, and then, you know, it's like, yes, I'm killing off some space, but I only need like one or two rows, you know? So my thinking is I'm going to have one good row, right? I'll put a bar behind it and then some beanbags in front of it. And that's it. That's really, because this room, what I want it to be is a model version of an amazing room that you can do, because it's only 10 foot wide. Or just under 11 foot, but so it's relatively narrow, right? Yep. So I can't get 4 seats in there. I can't, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, the thing is like, and then the way I want to build it and have another section. So the way I'm building the room, it's like, you know, it'll be kind of 10, 11 foot wide, but then I'm going to pull out all the sheetrock the house is on a pitch at that area. So I can actually build some false walls in there. So then mm-hmm. I can, that'll be sheetrocked. And then where the walls sit, then I'm going to use material.
Right.
To see most of the higher end, you know, so as they build it, cause then I get the extra space behind the speakers, but the speakers can sit right there. Right. And it just, it makes a room feel like it's bigger than it is. And now my speakers either sit recessed back. So, you know, it'll be fun. You know, and then I just before this call, so I was on with France. And so, I am putting in a Storm audio receiver.
Nice.
So yeah, so I'm going to put a Storm audio processor and then a Storm audio amplifier. And then I'll probably end up with the second set of amps that are digital because what's cool with this Storm processor. And we were showing this at Cydia, right? Yeah, so that's where I kind of got a chance to play around with it.
Yeah.
But they're running AES 67, you know, and or Dante. So, you know, whichever platform you prefer with it, but still digital. And so it's just nuts how it works. So, you know, and with this, unit itself, so with the Mark III, you can basically have it set so you can run your digital amplification. So I can have a full set of speakers that are all digital amped, and then I can have a full set that are analog, and I can switch between them with the push of a button. So I don't have to I can actually demo, and then I'm going to build out. So in the LCR, let's say up front, and same thing in the sides, but with the LCR, I'll actually have a space. So custom pieces for two centers, two lefts, two rights,
jeez,
so that I can actually compare demo. Two different sets of speakers and demo, right? So
yeah. You
can do a true A-B comparison where I've got a set that is, you know, let's call it the, you know, the house set, right? You know, here's the standard at which I'm running. And then here's the competitive product that somebody wants to be able to check out. And then you can do the same thing with the digital amps and the analog amps. So you can test between two different amplifier sets. I want to make it so I can actually test between two different processors. You know, I really want to build this out to be a killer demo setup.
Yeah.
So that I can, you know, really see the difference between the two, you know, and you can answer a question, you know, Trinov versus Storm or, you know, PowerSoft versus whatever, or, you know, Kef versus James versus, you know, Grimani versus whatever. And so that's kind of the goal. You know, I always want to have a set that works.
Yeah.
So you can just walk in and run the theater, right? Cause that's the issue with a lot of people, but for a lot of demo rooms and a lot of even, you know, a lot of guys that are doing reviews, they never have a room that's properly set up. Products coming in, products coming out, you know, and it's going in a family room or it's going into a normal room. They don't really get the true ability to, you know, to demo it properly. And so here the idea is, yeah, it's not a crazy amount of seating. It's not a this and that, but it lets me truly control this room. You know, and I found that for me, the Storm processor seemed to have all the best features to go in there. You know, I can still manually calibrate it. I can run direct live. Like I said, I can run digital amplification versus analog amplification. So pretty much any question that, you know, you or a consumer or anybody has, we should be able to do a literal A-B comparison and say, yeah, you know, this is how it works. This is what works better or works different or, you know, however you want to look at it as, you know, and their Mark III processor seemed to do what I needed to do for, you know, for building a real test bench, and just a killer theater.
Oh yeah.
So, you know. So I'm excited for that. I got to figure out speakers next coming up. And then I got to figure out what screen, you know, I think I'll, probably use something from Seymour. And then I got to figure out Perfed versus, Woven and, you know, and I think I'm going to do a two-way mask on it. So, the way the room's set up, I want to put like the biggest screen I can. And so the thinking is I'll put a 16:9 screen in, but then have a vertical mask so that I can get a great, you know, 2.35-2.4 scope, you know, that basically uses the whole width of the room still and then just, you know, gives you a nice black coating for the, you know, from the top and the bottom.
That's nice. It's, what was the number? Like, I thought it was the 191 screen or something that you would do. Like, if you're trying to cover your whole wall and you're going to do four way.
Yeah.
I think you'd, because then you can get, you get the most height out of it. You get all, you know.
Yeah. And then you just use the mask to do. So, and I thought about running a four way, you know, they just start getting more and more expensive, right? You know, and so
that's the thing.
From my perspective, you know, if you're watching TV or sports, it's generally 16:9. I mean, that's why people keep buying 16:9 screens, because you know, there's still a lot of content in that format. And if you're watching movies, you're, you know, it changes depending on the director, but you know, typically a 2.35, 2.4. And so I figure if I can at least move that down vertically.
Yeah. The horizontal masking coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, but I'm always at the end of the screen.
Right.
And it should work for the most part.
Yeah. Constant width to me is more important than constant height.
Constant height. Yeah. No, I agree.
You know, it's like a lot of people, it's also dependent on, like, if you buy a CinemaScope screen and you don't have masking, you just go with that width.
Yeah.
It's usually, in my opinion, I'm not saying I wouldn't do it, but it's because my walls, my height, I don't have enough height. Sure. But I would want that true CinemaScope experience because I got the width to do it.
Yeah.
Right. But if you don't have the height, then you go CinemaScope. I go, if you've got the height, why would you not put screen there?
Yeah.
Because if you filled it that wide, then when you put your masking on to come down, that's what you would have bought in the first place.
Exactly right. And that's where I love the idea of having a mask and at least a two-way mask. Like I said, I get the benefits of a four-way mask. It's just a matter of cost and where you put your dollars, right? So in my mind, a two-way mask that's vertical, that gives me a constant width. I can go all the way across. Like I said, this room is relatively narrow. It's only about 11 feet wide. It's a good size screen by all means, but that's only 130 inches, you know, and by the time you get your border and all your other stuff, you're at like 125, 130 inches. But it's 7 foot tall. So, I mean, I can get the height that I need you can go a little higher, right? So I can go to the top of the ceiling. I don't believe, you know, you go down too far. I see some that go all the way down to the floor and it's like, but you can't see that if you're in the second row or wherever else. It's just,
Now
you're going down in like this too much. So it's like, I want something in there. I mean, for me, I'm usually watching movies. I think that's what we'll mainly watch in there. So, the 2.35, 2.4, it will probably be using that, which is why I want at least a two-way mask. But it's like, I'm not going to put a CinemaScope in. I'm going to put in a 16:9 because then I know I got the best width and the best height that I can possibly get. And if the movie doesn't require that, then at least it's black instead of, having these big white bars, right?
So, that's what I want to do. I definitely, if I can get it, I want the two-way masking.
Yeah.
At least, because
I got to dig into it a little bit more, but I know Seymour even did a cool setup. Let's call it a third party. It's by Seymour, but it's like a third party masking, meaning that it's separate from the screen.
Yeah.
It's just its own piece, but it's not like just a magnet. Those obviously too, but that's manual. Then I got to figure out where to put all that stuff. Right. So I love the idea, but it's basically like an add-on aftermarket, two-way mask. And so I love the idea of that, because if you didn't have one before, or, you know, realistically, let's say budget wise, it didn't cover it, but now you can kind of throw it in there.
See, that's what I was thinking. Cause for the, like, you get the two-way masking, the electric two-way automatic masking, right? And then you connect that to your system, and then the movie comes on the collider and go, that's cool. But for those rare Snyder Cut type movies where you want to come in on a 16 by 9 screen, you just get the magnet ones and pop them up there. Sure. It's like, because I'm not, I don't see if I had the disposable income, I'd get away masking. But I don't see for those few movies, or if you watch like Dracula from 1940s, it's like you just throw the magnet ones up there, and it's like that's it's super cheap, super easy, and you just keep them off to the side or something, or put them in a closet. But that to me is that it's like, I mean, if I can't afford the electric masking, that's probably what I'll do for everything. Sure. But yeah, I would like to be able to have
having
that.
Black around the edge is still better than, you know, more white screen. So it's always going to look better. And I agree. You know, like I said, there's nothing wrong with the magnet piece going in there. But if you can throw in a two-way mask, it's so cool. You know, like I said, it's cool to see it automatically move. You know, it helps with the colors and everything else, because you actually get the black, you know, instead of projecting black onto the white, which is just gray.
The other thing you could do for two, instead of spending on an entire four-way masking, you could save yourself a lot of money and just put in powered curtains.
Yeah.
And then just have them come in. And you just program then it's you do it yourself and you
so you just set the points where they go in.
And you'd be like, so you just hit a button for that masking on like Snyder Cut, and you'd be like, hey, where'd those curtains come from?
Which is absolutely right. You know, especially if you want that classic kind of, you know, red curtain, burgundy curtain anyways, right? There's lots of ways to, you know, to be able to do that. And it's easy, you know, so you hit one more button, or if you have a control system, it's still just one button, you know, and it's going to move it automatically, both, you know, the mask and the curtain. And we'll have shades, like I'll have shades in most of the windows here. So it's like, I'm already putting those in. Lutron makes them, other brands make them where, you know, you could go all the way, you might as well go all the way across at that point, you know, so you could actually close it if you wanted the full movie theater and then just whoop, open them up. But then, open them up only 80% of the way. When you, you know, when you need that extra little bit on that four-way mask. But, no, man, there's so much cool stuff. You know, I'm so happy for you. You get to build it. You're at a point where you can do even a little more, because like I said, I'm in a 10-year-old build, and I know I'm going to be digging under concrete and doing all this and that to get power to the back. And, I'm trying to figure out my speaker layout in the backyard and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, well, I got to get across this, you know, 7-foot section of concrete. So, I'm reading up and watching my Google videos.
I'm doing the same thing with my tile tub, my tile shower. I'm putting it. I'm doing like just the walk-in shower. So there's no sill. I mean, they have systems for that.
Full, like roll in so you could,
walk on in. It's just the entire bathroom is one level.
So it's a wet, wet bathroom, right?
It's a wet bathroom. So that's, I'm watching all the YouTube videos on how to do it, and all the YouTube videos on what people did wrong. And cause I mean, doing electric, once it's in, you're pretty much good. If it's running, you're good. Yeah. If you know how to do your connections and stuff. Water is like, could be a problem. It might be great day one.
Yep.
6 months, a year, 10 years. All of a sudden you're like, uh-oh. It's you got to make sure you do it right.
I'm trying to figure out right now, DJ. So like I said, I've had a few issues in this house since we bought it. But my upstairs, in my primary bath, right? So you go in and there's like the bathroom, and then there's a little water closet, right? Your typical for the toilet. So the toilet was leaking. And so, you know, you've got your bolts that go down to the bottom, right? And you've got a wax seal, and, you know, you push it down. And again, 10 years ago, we bought it and everything seemed to be fine. Well, that bathroom, that section tilts backwards just a little bit, which I'm assuming is fine. But point being, so when you flush the toilet, water would leak out the bottom. And unfortunately, it's dirty water. It's not coming out of the tank. It's coming out, right? But I don't know, because it's not like you're standing there and your feet are getting wet, because it's tilted back slightly. It's just rolling to the back. So my wife notices it because she's cleaning up some of the stuff, and there's mold on the floor on the back. Yep. And then there's a baseboard trim around, and it's like pulling off and waving and this and that. So she calls me in, and I'm looking at it. I'm like, okay, well, let's figure this out. So, you know, I'm flushing. I'm trying to figure out where, you know, is it leaking from the tank? Is there, you know, where is this coming from? Is it coming from the wall? You know, you don't know. And so, you know, I'm flushing it, and I can see it literally coming out where the screw holes, you know, where the bolt holes come down. And so I'm looking it up, and they're like, well, sometimes they just come a little loose and they do this and that. And, you know, what are you going to do? Like, I was in my other house for 20 years, never had a problem.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, well, you know, I'm looking at it. I'm like, well, you know, you can clean the mold off the top. That's not, you know, it's just little mold. It's, you know,
yeah.
And, but I'm like, the baseboard's got to come up, and then I got to see how much damage did it do.
Did
behind
it get
it.
In underneath? And
so yeah. Now I'm cut up like 2 foot tall. So 2 foot above the tile level,
drywall.
All the way across, which is like 4 foot. Yeah. 3-4 foot. And then across the walls going back, probably another 2-3 feet, 2 feet high as well. And then I just took it all out so that I could dry it all out. Right. You know, and luckily, you know, we had an issue downstairs that was bigger. So they, when they built the roof, so pay attention to this one, 'cause this one, So they built the roof, and there wasn't enough pitch on it. So they built it. This is like when you walk into the backyard, there's like a little overhang, like a little, it's not a deck because it's on the concrete, but you know, just an overhang, right? Well, they built it flat, but with tile. So it was holding the water in, and it started leaking. And then it started, and again, it created mold in the walls. And I ended up having to pull out like this whole section in my kitchen. Pull it down, call in a remuneration guy, you know, like, so the mold people and all this and that, and too much money, right? You know? And, so this one, I'm like, okay, this doesn't look that bad. I'm going to try it myself. I can at least, if nothing else, I've pulled it off. I've identified it, and maybe that saves me a couple bucks, right? But like you were saying before, you know, you can do it for a lot less. I understand how this stuff generally works, right? By no means am I a specialist, but you know, but it's my stuff. And I'm like, you know, basically the mold dies as it dries, and it needs some, you know, so it needs moisture and it needs something to feed on, and you can clean it off, and there's products to do that. And so I got the heaters blowing, and I got a dehumidifier. So it's sucking out all that. It's crazy how much water that thing sucks out too. And so, you know, so I'm trying to finish it up now, but it's just like, you know, one project after another, but you know, you just gotta, you just don't know. And like you said, with plumbing, like these are 10 years old and it doesn't look like it's been doing anything that long. And it's like, we haven't done anything. You just, you know, it's just, but eventually those little bolts loosen up and that's it, you know?
Well, so I think the wax seal settles. You can get anything, right?
Little,
and it's like, so you tighten that down. It's, there's so many.
Yeah, but like, when was the last time you tightened down the bolts if you didn't have a problem? You know what I mean? Like, I've never thought about doing that in 20 years in my last house.
No.
Never had to. You know, I pulled the tank off the back. I've replaced the guts, you know, in the back.
Replaced toilets before.
Yeah, you know, but it's like, but if you're not pulling out the full toilet, then like, yeah, I've never checked the bolts just to make sure it's still tight and whatever else. It's just, you know, like I said, you got to just pay attention to it, do it right. And especially, I agree, you know, electrical is important because obviously, you know, you create fires, you can do different things.
Create a fire.
You got to do it right. But like you said, it kind of works or it doesn't, you know, for the most part. It's,
if you know how to terminate everything, you should be fine.
But water, you know, you get a kind of loose pipe and you get a this or that, or, you know, a nut that's not totally tight. And now the wax seal doesn't work. And, you know, and you end up spending, you know, tens of hours, 100 hours, and, you know, and a couple hundred bucks doing it yourself, or a couple $1,000 bringing somebody else in, you know? So, no, man, it's crazy, but you know, but it's fun. Gives you something to do. I always like learning some new skill to it. So I'm like, I'm going to figure out, especially 'cause I'm about to do like the theater. So I know I'm going to be cutting sheetrock, and I've never really sheetrocked a room or done anything.
Oh, really?
I've helped and done stuff, but like, I wasn't doing that section of it when I was pulling the wire. I've done all those kinds of things. I've made patches. So I've done small pieces like that. But not whole walls, right? You know, not full mudding. And these are all level 5 imperfect walls. So I'm trying to keep it consistent. So I'm like trying to figure out how you got, you know, you got to do full skim coats and all this and that.
Yeah, I know. I've done all that. I did my recent, a year, I mean, my daughter's house. We redid that. And that's like, when you're redoing something, like what you're doing, it's so much harder than doing like what I'm doing. And it's because it's all, you have to work within the confines of something else.
Yeah, you're matching something else. You're not just making and something new that looks right.
And try, and then nothing is usually level or nothing is square. And you're like trying to get things. Oh my God. And it just, it is, it's hard to, yeah, it's hard to, it's much harder to do. But it's, I mean, drywall's, like, I might do my house. I haven't, the guy hasn't gotten me his quote yet. And if his labor's too much, I'm just like, it's not worth it to me. Cause it, like, if he comes in really high, cause some people around here have been coming in really high and that's why I'm worried about it. My wife doesn't want me to do it cause it's hard. It's hard. It's physically hard, right? Yeah. So it's not hard to do. It's not rocket science. It's super easy. And that's why I can do it, but it's just really physically like moving that stuff, doing that. And then even just doing your skim coats and everything, it's like you're just going all day long. It's just, you know, it's not easy. So she doesn't want me to do it.
Yeah.
But if he comes in with a quote, like if it's 10 grand, there's no way I'm giving up that 10 grand. Yeah. I can do this myself. Yeah. I'm like, there's no way.
We're looking at the same thing for like for painting in the house. You know, like this house is 5,600 square feet. I mean, it's just, you know, but if you break it down room by room, you know, I mean, it's painting a room. I've painted tons of rooms, you know, and so, but I've got, you know, like in the entryway, it's a tall two stories, you know, so again, it's, you know, 25, you know, feet tall. You know, my wife doesn't want me on a 25 foot ladder trying to be, you know, and frankly, either do I, you know, so I'm like, well, if I can paint 80% of the house and just bring somebody in for those areas, then
and tell people not to look up.
That's right. Look
up. Give everybody a baseball cap when they come in.
But like the house right now, it's just, it looked good. Everybody that, you know, you mentioned it to, they're just like, you know, what are you talking about? But when they patched stuff, like the colors didn't match quite right. And you could see the white underneath it. It's not like they did one coat instead of two. And, you know, it's like, no, you know, if this is the dream home and what you're trying to do, or I'm taking videos of stuff and this and that, I want it to look good. You know, I want it to look right. And, you know, our last house we painted, I got blessed with one kid that didn't like to paint on the walls, you know, but so, I mean, you know, we painted 20 years and I didn't paint it again for 20 years, you know, and, you know, it touched up a few things and that was it. So, you know, in my mind, you know, especially if it's super high up and this and that, like nobody's touching the walls at this point, you know, you should be able to paint it and be done for the next, you know, 10, 15
years. Forever.
Yeah.
So painting to me is, that's what I do. It's easy.
Yeah.
I have no problem painting, and I'll tell you about a tool I use if you want. That's a lot of people. I've been using it for, I don't know, 20 years, maybe 15. I don't know. They weren't out when I built my house 20 years ago. So, these things are super cheap and it's super easy to do. And I'll tell you about it later, but it's painting to me. Like I'll be doing my house, and I was talking to my, my wife's brother-in-law, and he did his house back 20 years ago, but he's like, I'm going to save money. And he goes, it took him 3 weeks to paint his house, and he's got about 2,800 square foot colonial, right? Yeah. So he has to do all the rooms. But the problem was, he's like, it's going to take me 3 weeks. And I told him, I go, I'll have my house painted in a weekend. 2 days, the whole house. And he goes, no way. I go, yeah, I will. I go, guaranteed. I go, maybe a day. I go, but I'll have the whole thing done in a weekend. And he's like, there's no way. And I was like, yeah. And he goes, you got to cut in all the line. I go, I ain't cutting in crap. One, I know what I'm doing. But two, when he did his house and he explained it to me, I was like, what are you doing? Everybody was done. He said, don't paint anything. Then he went in and painted All his trim was up. All his floors were down. His cabinets. So he had to go. It took him just 3 weeks because he had to go around everything. I go.
Had to tape everything off. And yeah, I'm sure.
I go, I'm just painting bare walls. My floors aren't down. He goes, what about your trim? I go, that goes in last. I put that in after I do the floors. That way you just put it right on top.
And then paint the trim first before you even put it up.
Paint the trim in the garage. Everything's done. I go, bang, done. And he's like, yeah, there's a process.
Well, and again, that's the problem, you know, building on a new house where you can do that. Versus,
well, that was a new house for him.
Yeah, no, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, you can do that. I'm stuck in this spot where I've got all this, like, amazing crown molding and base molding, but you know, all the molding is like 6-8 inches tall, right? So I got to get all that painted, and then I got to paint the walls around it. And then there's all this built-in custom cabinetry, and I'm just like, it's all beautiful when it's there, but I'm just sitting there going, oh yeah, I got to figure out how to do all this without making a mess. But yeah, you know, you paint the walls first, and then you do the trim, and that covers up any issues that you made on the, you know,
just trim in the first
place. And so we'll see. I mean, yeah, I did two coats in this room.
That room looks good since the last time I saw it.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, really it used to be green, and it used to be, you know, and so, it looks good. And yeah, it took me, you know, again, I did two coats. So I did it over two nights. When I start painting at 10 o'clock at night. You know, and I'm like, okay, I got to finish this so that then it could just dry overnight. Then I'm not in here working. And then come back in the next day, and then I work my day, and then I paint it back at night again. And but yeah, you know, like I said, I don't mind doing it, but you know, there are a few spots where I'm like, yeah, I mean, I could rent a, you know, something to get me up a little higher, a little safer than just a, you know, an extension ladder. You know, but yeah, I'm like, otherwise, if I can do 80% of it, bring somebody in for the last 20 just to make sure that it's all perfect. You know, then that's great. But, you know, otherwise, if I can get all the main rooms done, yeah, nobody's looking way up top and nobody's doing the snat. You know, it's you know, not something you really have to worry about. So,
yeah. And it's that's the other thing is you always notice stuff, whether it's in your theater or anything you do in your own house, you notice far more than anybody else.
Yep.
And like, I notice stuff because like as just like we're talking today, it's like they're, really isn't an aspect to a house that I haven't done.
Sure.
Right. So I go into somebody's house and it is what it is my mind too. It's the details I see, especially I look at a car. I told you that story. It's like, I could see if it's been painted or not. Yeah. I go in a house and I'm just like, I look at corner. I look at everything. And I'm like, yeah, I'm doing okay. Cause like, this, like everybody else has their stuff done by professionals and I'm seeing the same flaws, if not worse.
Oh, sure.
But nobody noticed. They're minor things. It's not a huge thing, but it's like, you know, like my wife complains about certain stuff in our house. And I'm like, you do understand, like take a picture of it, of our living room, and then walk away and like, look at that picture later or show it to somebody. And they're like, oh my God, that looks like
nobody a picture noticed.
From like, you know, good, you know, housekeeping magazine or something, whatever, not housekeeping, but good home.
Sounds like you read a lot of good housekeeping there, DJ.
Yeah. I don't know. I was struggling for a magazine that it'll be in, right? But it's something that like when you look at it, but when you're there and she's like, but look at, you see the dirt here and you can see this and that the flaws. I'm nobody sees that crap. They're just like, wow, look at that.
Well, it's even as we were buying the place, you know, and you go in once and you go in twice, you don't notice it. You know, you're in love with the big, you're looking at all the big stuff and everything else. And it's not until you moved in and now you're like, oh,
yeah.
You know, and they're still small, but it's just like, oh yeah, they clearly only put one coat of paint here. Or you go into one of the other little water closets and like you could see where they tried to, they repainted the wall and it's a different color. But then when they got around the tank, they didn't want to deal with it. So that's the original color. And it just, you know, in my mind, I'm like, oh, that looks horrible. But like, who cares? It's, you know, it's in a water closet that nobody's really using. And even when you have guests over, that's probably not, it's not even the primary one. So, you know, is this really what I need to worry about? Or do I, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You got better things to, bigger fish to fry.
That's right. That's right.
And that's where I'm at right now. There's so, like I said the other day, like my basement just got poured. So now like everything that theater is becoming more and more of a reality, but sure. I still have a house to build.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have all those, I have like steps, like things I have to get done. And what's nice is when like a contractor will be like, I'm going to be there. I got to get this done. So, okay, what do you need from me? And it's I need you to have this ready for me. So it's like, bang. So that gives me a focus. And like I said, when we were sitting down, and I was like, I thought I had nothing today, and I was just going to be starting doing some stuff on my own speed. And I had three people call me, tell me they're doing something. We got this going, floor, garage going into my garage floor, this stairs going. So I'm being pulled, and I like that.
Yeah.
When I'm left to my own, I'll stand under the deck and be like, all right, how am I going to waterproof this? and then I look to my left and I'll go, that's my basement. And I'll go in and be like, all right, the screen's going to be right there. Yeah. And you start daydreaming about the stuff you're going to do next because it's like, and it's just so, it's like you get pulled, you get so excited.
Well, there's so many different areas. Yeah. I mean, and that's the difference between, you know, when you're looking at that, you know, that one bedroom apartment or the this or that versus a house, you know, it's like, it may not all be as fun as the home theater, but it's still all important in how you build it. Right. And so, you know, you're like, well, I, especially for you, same as me, you know, I want my garage to look right. I want my this, it's like, well, I need to budget it out because I can't do them all at once. But even if I could, because I want to do a lot of it myself, I can't do it all at once. Right. You know, and so, I was chatting with the storm people today because we were trying to figure out, like, I'm trying to place my order and, you know, so I'm like, okay, you know, cause some stuff's still on back order and whatever else. And so they're like, no, you know, we should be able to get your order processed, you know, relatively quickly. And I said, well, that's fine. I said, you know, sooner the better so I can start playing with it and figuring things out. I go, but I don't have a room built. You know, I don't have speakers. I don't have anything else yet. So take your time.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, it's like, yeah, I just want to make sure that I get my order placed and write the check so that I can, you know, I know that it's coming at some point when I'm ready. But yeah, you know, or my wife's like, you know, so what are you working on next? I'm like, well, you know, we got lighting and then I got outdoor lighting because I want to be able to enjoy the backyard this year. So, you know, the lighting, but then that's a big project because now, like I said, there's no electrical. So I have to, you know, build out where I'm going to put my transformer and, you know, run all my low voltage lighting and figure out how I'm going to light everything out. And, you know, but it's like, but is that more important than starting my theater? That, you know, but then I don't want to just start building my theater, you know, because the reality is I'm trying to plan this out properly. And I may even have like Anthony or Andrew over at, you know, with Keith Yates and, you know, help me just figure out a few of the design pieces, right? Make sure that I'm going in the right path. And so, yeah, I don't want to just get started and grab some 2x4s and start, you know, building out, you know, my front wall or my back wall, you know, and then have them say, oh, well, you should have done it this way, you know, and then you're pulling it back down or doing whatever. So, you know, I'm trying to, like you said, you just start daydreaming and you're like, oh, let's go work on this. Let's go work on that. And, you know, I definitely can get a little squirrel, you know, on that kind of stuff. And,
That's you know, whereas,
yeah, like you said, when somebody sits there and says, oh, well, yeah, this is coming tomorrow. Oh, okay.
Okay. All right.
Time to get focused on this. This is what I'm working on now.
Yeah. And that's nice, too, because then all of a sudden you've just accomplished something huge, you know, like, oh, wow, look, all that's done and you got it all done, you know. So it's, but yeah, it's like squirrel.
There's so much stuff. I started working. We were doing the backyard, like I said, a couple weeks ago. And then my father-in-law will be back in a couple of weeks, week after Easter. And so, like I said, we're working on the backyard. We're cleaning a lot of stuff out. And then I started, like, my wife's car and my daughter's car are still outside because when we're moving everything in, like, just boxes, like everybody, right? Boxes in the garage. So I'm like, you know what? We're cleaning out this garage. We're getting some cars. You know, my cars are in because it's, you know, again, lucky.
Because they have to be.
You know, I've got a 4-car garage and the 2-car tandem side is just mine. And then the bigger garage, you know, 2-car garage is like the family. And so my wife, my daughter's car, but yeah, it's just been filled. But yeah, you go through and I worked on it for the day. I got one more day's, you know, or a half day's worth of work left to do in there. But yeah, you look at it and you're like, oh, I accomplished something.
Yeah.
You know, let's get this stuff done. Let's, you know, let's clean it out and we'll get some cars in there and, you know, and hanging the bikes from the ceiling and, you know, just kind of getting some of those things done that you're like, yeah, okay, I get this. I feel like I got something checked off the list instead of 20 things and nothing's done. You know, you got to start knocking a few of those things off the list.
Yeah.
Cause I was getting into the issue of that, you know, and, you know, I get a little anxious on it when it's like I said, my master bathroom was having an issue, right? With a leak in there. And then my HVAC was having an issue and then my fence was blowing down and it was all within the same 3 weeks. Ugh. And you know, you're like, okay, one thing, I'm gonna figure this out. And then the next thing happens and you're like, are you kidding me? And then the third, and you're just sitting there going, oh, I don't want to just write checks on this. I know I can do it, but then what do I work on today? What's the priority? And so you just kind of got to, like, in our case, it was still cold out. So it was like, okay, let's get the HVAC, you know, up and running. Yeah, and
need heat.
So I started doing that. I'm like, we just won't use that bathroom, you know? And so, so, you know, I just kind of, you know, capped off that room and pulled out the toilet and, you know, I cut out the sheetrock so I could get it drying and everything else. And then I just kind of left the fence down for 2 weeks, you know, cause it was still storming. So I'm like, I'm going to put this up. It's going to blow right back down again. So we put a few stakes up to just kind of prop it up a little bit, but then that blew down like 2 days later with the next storm. And then I just said, you know what? Like, I don't care. Nobody's in the backyard right now. You know, we're not out there. It's winter. It's storming. It's, you know, so I'm just like, you know, what's the worst case, like some turkeys or a deer, because we actually have a lot of those, you know, walks into the backyard. I'm not overly concerned. So I just kind of, I left it down. I'm like, I don't care, you know, let a neighbor talk, whatever, you know, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks ago, and then I propped it up, did it right, you know, and posted it back in and, you know, now I'm good, you know, and then, but I felt great, frankly, when it was checked off the list. Cause I was like,
yeah,
fence is done. You know, we may redo it, but I'm not ready to do that right now. Yeah. I know it will hold at least another year and, you know, be it this summer, fall or next summer, I can actually think about it when all my other stuff is done and I can make a decision on that or spend 2 weeks on it, you know, to build it out and, you know, and do it right. So you know, you got to knock that off and then. HVAC, like I said, is primarily done. I've got one or two little tweaks in this system that need to be programmed. And then the bathroom, like I said, is all pretty much dried out. I just got to figure out if I have to crack the tile at the bottom, you know? And so I've been waiting to figure that out because it's like, I don't know how well sealed because it's right around the ring.
Right.
And so I don't know, like it's dry. Like a lot of times if there's water down below, the mortar loosens up. You know, it's softer move. So they're not moving at all. And I know it's relatively dry, but then I don't want it to create more. But then,
Can you see the subfloor from below?
No.
So it's
fully covered up, to the stud brace, you know, down on the ground, and then it's all tiled out. So I can't see it without cracking the tile. And they're butted up against the walls and everything else. So I know I can't save it. Like it's cracked. I have yet to see a YouTube video where anybody like, they're like, oh, here's how you do this to save the tile. Well, what they do, every one of them, they broke the tiles in front of it.
Right.
To show you how to pop the one tile. But I'm like, but if it's the tile in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see a way to be able to do it. So, so then I'm like, well, but now I got to match the tile, right? You know, and they're these like 16 to 18 inch, so slightly odd sized tiles.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like, you know, again, nobody makes things easy, man.
No. And to me, it's like a lot of what you're saying, it's like the stress of it all. And that's why it feels so good when you can check it off. It's the stress of it all is the unknown of, how am I doing this? Especially for guys like you and I, like, all right, I got to do this, but can I do this? What do I got to do here? What do I get? But once you get it checked off, you're like, okay. Yeah. That's how I did. If I knew, like, if it was my job, my profession, like what I do, there's no stress at all. I know exactly what to do. I just got to do it. Right. Yeah. So like your car's damaged. Bang. I'm not, I know how to do that. All of this other stuff, like you said earlier, I'm no expert at any of this. Yeah. So it's like, I mean, maybe the painting, that's fine. But everything else, it's like I'm problem solving some issues. But at the same time, it's the biggest problem is me being not the expert. So I got to figure this stuff. But then once you finish it, you're like, all right, that turned out pretty good.
Yeah.
Right,
and I know how to do that now. And yeah, like you said, you know, these things aren't full respect for the people that do it for a living because they could do it 10 times faster than me and better than me and this and that. But I'm like, yeah, I like learning this stuff. I love doing it. I mean, this is, you know, usually that extends to technology for me, you know, learning how to program stuff or doing this and that. I mean, that's where I tend to spend, you know, my time and work and things like that. But I'm like, yeah, you know, why wouldn't I want to learn how to be able to do this? Yeah. And it doesn't get taught the same way that it used to, you know? And so, you know, I'm like, yeah, you know, I, you know, I have the space and, you know, I don't really feel like I have the time, but like, you know, let's go, you know, I can cut this wood myself and I can do this, that, and, you know, it's not that hard to re-put in because I pulled out all the baseboards on the bottom as I was cutting up the sheetrock. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, I can cut the sheetrock. That's not a problem. And even nowadays, like I, you know, I will say I cheated a little bit because I don't have a big truck for all this stuff. And, you know, I didn't want to pay for all of it. So I'm like, it's only 2 foot tall. So I cut it 2 foot tall because you can now buy 2 foot by 2 foot sections of drywall.
Oh, can you?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that yet.
And you pay a buck more or whatever, right? Yeah. You know, so it's a little bit more, but they're manageable.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so you can toss it in the back of the car, you can toss it in the room, and then basically it's just a couple small sheets and none of the sections, like the walls less than
4 feet.
So it's just, you know, I make a couple cuts and this and that, and that's it. You know, but now I don't have to deal with this 4 by 8 foot, you know, sheetrock board. Yeah, and trying to carry the damn thing up the stairs and trying to, you know, and where do you cut it and everything else. And it's like, no, now I can just have it right up in the bathroom, slice it where I need to and be done with it. And then, you know, find the base molding, you know, chop it up. And I've got a miter saw for that. And, you know, so I just easy, you know, so, you know, like I said, I think it's fun, you know, but yeah, I try to watch a ton of stuff, but that's the beauty of YouTube, you know, and that's a lot of why, like with my new Fecnatics channel, you know, that's as we go through the lighting, as we go through everything else, like I'm going to film all of it, you know, because there's not enough of that stuff out there. You know, it's either a sales pitch or it's a this or that. And so I want to be able to show people in a way like, hey, no, here's how the lighting works. Here's what your options are. You know, pick what suits you best, but yeah, you should know the difference between Lutron Ketra and, you know, a Prolux DMF, you know, something in the mid-level and then a Hue and then your basic lighting, right? You know, and you pick what's best for you, but you should always know what's there because what sucks more than anything is when you put something in and then you realize, oh, for 10%
more, I could have done that. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, so, you know, I've got 4 new videos that I'm working on right now. And like I said, most of them are 80% complete, but I want to be able to show the after lighting, you know, like what goes in there. So I'm waiting for these last, you know, or these big shipments to come in with all these lights. So, but yeah, no, I created a terms and technology video. So we talk about, you know, all the things you need to be paying attention to. And really the idea is if you're building a place that you can come and you can learn a little bit more about lighting. So if you're talking with an electrician or you're talking with the builder, you know what you should be asking for. And you know what those options are because so many times we see it, the electrician is just trying to move on to the next build. And they're just doing the basic 4 cans and a fan. You know, and you come in and it, you know, it works, it lights the room, but it doesn't light up the things the way they should be. It doesn't highlight the fireplaces and the other stuff. You look at the outdoor lighting and it's like barely there. It's like, hey, yeah, there's a porch light and maybe there's a few carriage lights on the wall and maybe a couple step lights, you know, if there's some stairs. And then you look at some of the amazing outdoor lighting stuff and it's just makes the houses look phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, you know, like I said, I want to be able to teach some of that and show how it works. And then that'll be lighting and shades. And then we'll move into the home theater. And then after the home theater will likely be the garage.
Oh,
so yeah,
going into the garage,
man. So we'll start with my section and, So it'll be fully painted, and then I got to figure out what I'm putting on the ground. And then new cabinetry going all the way around and slat wall. I'll probably put a couple TVs in there, some other stuff to be able to do. And then
you're doing the slat wall.
Yeah, I think so.
I was looking into it.
I obviously there's lots of different ways to do it, and, but slat wall looks clean. And I found one that's actually done. So it's got metal braces instead of just wood. So it'll hold more weight. You don't have to worry about it breaking. But the front of it, so like it's got metal, you know, as it hooks in on the bottom, and the frame is metal. But the front of it is like a carbon fiber.
Oh.
So, but at first I thought it was saying it was like sheeted carbon fiber, which isn't that expensive necessarily, but is
really right. Cool.
I think it might be just a carbon fiber look, which in my mind is different because it's, I like things that, if it's carbon fiber, it should be carbon fiber. It shouldn't be,
Right.
And so I was looking at, but I loved it because then you kind of get like that nice carbon fiber, gray black wall.
Yeah.
And then I was going to paint the walls probably a nice gray. And then we'll do some lighting and some other stuff. It'll be sick. Like I said, I'm super excited for it, but I'm trying to, like I said, okay, one thing at a time.
I was just talking to the guy doing my floors about the garage floor. Mm-hmm. And basically for longevity, what I've found and what I is, tile is the best way to go, because anything else, any of the epoxies, what you would spend to do, like you can do like those full, like pour out epoxy and nail, and you can, but they always lift. We did one in the body shop. That we built the body shop at the place I used to work at, and we did all the research. We did everything on like the best floor you could put down and what you got to do to get it down. You do the etching, you do everything. It's brand new concrete. And like a year later, you're driving over it. It's cars. It's, you're turning wheels on this and it's, I don't care what you put down.
It's hot.
Temperature changes, concrete's always changing. And it's the one thing about concrete is, like my buddy told me years ago when I was working with him doing concrete, is like concrete is never 100% cured.
Yes.
There's always moisture going in and out of concrete.
Yep.
So anything you put on it, something's going to be trying to come out. Yep. Something's going to be, so it's, to me, it's like when you just put those floors down, it's like they're not going to last. They look great. Like you see those ones at like Home Depot, and you can put the speckles in it and you can do it. And they look awesome.
And the swirls and all this stuff.
Yeah. But eventually it just goes, it'll come up. And now when it starts peeling, it looks even worse. You just never did anything.
Yep.
But if you do, you could do super cheap tile. And if one pops up, you put it back down. It's no big deal. Or you could do the really nice grid systems that they have for garages.
Yep.
They're, so the only it's thing like a sport
I've,
court.
I've gone back and forth. Like the grids look cool. And they'll do different colors sometimes and this and that.
Yeah, you could stagger it like a checkerboard. Like
if you're washing your car indoors, like if you're East Coast or somewhere, like I understand that. For me, it's like I can always go outside. So there's no scenario where I'm putting anything wet in my garage typically. And so, but you could blow it out, you could do all that kind of stuff. So super, super cool for that. I understand the benefit, but yeah, I just, you don't really want to walk on it. It's, it's got all these holes in it, it's dirt and everything gets trapped down. I think what I'm going to end up putting in is, I guess, like an LVT, right? So the one that I found, so it's got an actual layer of stone. And then it's got a coating on top of it, right? A clear coat on top that's like, I want to say 40 mils. That seems thick. Maybe it's 4 mils, but so.
That's pretty
so
thick,
some,
yeah.
So, but some sort of nice coating on it. And then you can see the stone very clearly. And then you're waterproof and everything underneath it, right? And I've been trying to figure out. Otherwise, to your point, like I love the epoxy floors, the look of them. But same thing. I don't trust it. It's not going to lift.
I don't trust it. Yeah.
And I've seen people heat from the tires. I've seen, all those things that just kind of happen. And so like I said, this one seems to get pretty good reviews, or, guys are just staining their concrete. Yes. You know, and there's some cool stuff that you can do with it that
is
still just concrete at the end of the day, right? But at least gives it either a uniform or kind of a
color.
So I got to figure out what's going to go on the floor. But then, yeah, like I said, we'll paint the walls. I'll probably slat the walls. And then I'm going to run a perimeter of wall-mounted ceiling cabinets. So nothing on the floor.
Yes.
So, you know, easy to sweep up and everything else. So we'll do that around the back. And then probably a couple years from now, I got to build the savings back up for the next. But I want to get a lift in there. So if I can get a lift in there, then, you know, then that's my killer setup in there.
My buddy's doing my doors, and he comes over a couple of weeks ago, and I'm like, and my garage goes up just because of the way the house is designed. The ceilings in the garage are really high. Right. And I'm like, can we track this all the way up? And he goes,
for your garage door. Yeah.
And he goes, you getting a lift? I go, I don't know, but I don't want to have to redo it. So let's do it.
I got
to
be ready for it.
Yeah. And the other thing about tracking it all the way up is you could put lights further in because now the door doesn't.
Yeah. It doesn't cover them up. Yeah.
Doesn't come in as far into the garage because I still have like over my garage door, I have like 5 feet.
Sure.
So like the door goes up and it only bends in about 3 or 4 feet. Right. Yeah. So it's like, it's not that, not like, and it bothered me when we bought this place, and like the guy built it for me, but I did a lot of the other stuff, but I come in after they did the garage doors and I'm like, the ceilings in this garage are even higher. And I'm like, look at all that dead space over there.
Yep.
And I'm like, what the hell? It's like, I have a heavy bag in my garage that I put onto a, you know what I used is, the winch for boat for a boat. Yeah. You know, when you pull your boat onto your trailer.
Yeah,
when you
put the boat onto the
right. Yeah. So that's on the sidewall, and I ran the cable up to the rafters, down, and I have a heavy bag hanging on it. And if I want to hit the bag, I go and bring it down. But I gotta close the garage to do it.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, so it's like the little things you can do, but I'm like, if I had that, you know, why do they do that? But then he told me why. It does cost more money. He's like, you got to run track differently. And it's like, I thought it would be the same. He did explain it. He's a friend of mine. So it's not like he's trying to screw me.
Yeah.
But he's like, it is more money because the way you have to do it. And I'm like, I figured it's the same amount of track. What's the difference?
Yeah. What's the difference?
Right. But there was an explanation to it. I think
it comes into the weight of the door, because if you're pitched up higher,
right,
there's a constant amount of weight going on to the spring and on the motor.
That's exactly it.
Versus you nailed once it. You're horizontal, then in theory, there's not really any.
You're not holding anything. Yeah.
But no, I've looked at the same. So my ceilings are 14 feet tall in the garage. So like you said, you know, just like yours, you know, so mine are tall. So I'm like, beautifully. But then mine's also a tandem. So I could actually put the lift in the back and I don't even have to worry about the garage. But from a storage spot, I looked at the same thing, right? But my garage door in that one, they made it. I don't know that it's tall enough for an RV, and it curves, so I don't know how you'd get an RV in there. But I think it's a 9-foot door. So like it's a taller than normal door.
Mine are too. Mine are pretty big.
Yeah. So I mean, it looks cool in this and that, but I'm like, you know, in my mind, I could arch it up, you know, and go up higher, and then I could put storage in there, or I could do, you know, above, you know, ceiling mounted storage. But you know, the thing is, it's already built. So that's just fresh money for me, you know, where I'm like, and it's not something I want to do myself, because I don't need that thing falling down. but I have thought about doing a new motor, because even if you kept, let's say, the side rails, you can get rid of the center mounted motor, because now what everybody's doing is you attach a motor to the front wall right next to the, right next to the door, and it just spins right there, right? So
that's what I'm getting. It's so I got two doors, and a single motor goes between them on the wall at the
front.
On
the wall, right? Yeah,
and it just I'm not sure, but I think it's belt driven too, so it's even quieter.
Quieter.
I think the one I'm getting is belt driven too.
Yeah. So
he goes, they're great.
Yeah. Yep. And I may drop those because you can get a new LiftMaster and all those, you know, you can put those on afterwards. And so I'm curious because right now, so my garage is above where my home theater will be. And if you open up the garage door, it absolutely vibrates through those areas.
Oh,
like I can hear it clearly upstairs and two doors over. I can hear when that garage door opens up. And that's just because it's vibrating through the studs, which then transmits through the house.
Right.
And so, you know, one, I want to see if I keep it the way that it is. And I think these are belt driven, so they're quieter, you know, in the same way. So, so they're quiet when you're in the garage. It doesn't really sound that loud, but I'm like, I can hear it.
Right.
Two doors over and it sounds just as loud as if you're in the room. And, but I want to see because, you know, sometimes they have to be bracketed to be strong, but all you really got to do, just like floating a wall, you know, can you get a piece of rubber in there or something that detaches it?
Something, yeah.
But I don't know how that affects, you know, now does the motor move too much and then that affects how it pulls it up. So I got to do a little research on that once I get into the garage section of it. But I'm curious what's out there because there is a lot of stuff and I've been seeing guys that are asking to go more vertical on their garage so they don't lose that space. But yeah, everybody said that it's more expensive. And so it's like, well, okay, let's see what I can do. But if you could remove that motor from the middle, technically now you could put some storage right up in between the two rails. So I thought about that as kind of a, you know, a give and take, right? Keep the rails there, but then, you know, put the motor up front on the wall and then you don't have to worry about it. So, I don't know. We'll see.
It's crazy. Crazy. Hey, it's just two guys DIYing the crap out of life.
That's right. What can I save a dollar on doing it myself?
And not break it. And you know what's funny? I was thinking that when you were talking earlier. It's like people, like I get a lot, you know, I talk to people and they're like, how do you do all that stuff? How do you know how to do that? Well, one, I don't, but you just do it, right? Yeah. So that's one. But I'd say that the biggest difference between people like ourselves and people that don't want to do it and don't, it's you and I aren't afraid to screw up. Sure. It's because, and that's the thing, because I know that especially my listeners with their home theaters, we have people that built their own, we have people that have them built and we do this. But it's like, whenever you see somebody like that, you're just like us, you're just not afraid to make a mistake. Because especially at this point in our lives, we probably made so many that's, you know, that's why we know what we know.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why you're doing Factnatic, because you're like, if I had this 20 years ago.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I've learned some stuff. I've spent hundreds and thousands of hours learning this kind of stuff.
Right.
But for me, why wouldn't I share it with somebody, right? You know, there's people and same thing. Like, I'm learning how to do something. What do? I Google it, I YouTube it, And there's things that are there, but it's like, why not make that easier to find? Or, you know, like I said, the things that I've learned through the years that aren't really there as readily, like, you know, let's make it easy for people to find that content. You know, I think it's a great way to go. Now, at the same time, I legitimately think that you may watch that video and go, I don't think so. I understand the value of a professional. Right. You know, it's like, so whichever method you look at that, you know, you look at it and go, I could do this because I like the journey of it.
Right.
And other people are just like, I really don't want to screw this up. Let me go have a professional do it. At least you know the work that's involved. So in my mind, you know, it's not, you're doing this kind of stuff and that's, you know, robbing people. Now they're all going to do their own toilets and they're going to do their own fences and they're not going to call in a professional. No way. Most of the people that are going to look at that and they either realize that your video is cut down because nobody wants to watch 12 hours of me reposting stuff. You know, so you obviously you've cut it down, but like if you're talking honestly, like, hey, this was tough. This was that.
Yeah.
Then, you know, somebody may go, okay, I can do this. That's great because I don't have the money or I'm not going to spend the money. I wasn't going to spend it anyways. Right. Or they're going to sit there and go, that's a lot of work. Now I understand why, you know, you're charging me 80 hours of labor and it costs, you know, $1.20 an hour to, you know, to get somebody to do something. Cause it's like, you spent 20 years learning how to do this and you're going to do it literally 10 times faster than I can do it. Right. So I can either spend 4 weekends doing this, or I can have you come in for 4 hours, you know, and you're probably going to get it done.
Yeah.
And it's warrantied and it's whatever else. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, you know, you can't, in my mind, you know, you can't be afraid, you know, say something breaks, turn the water off, you know,
yep.
You know, something electrical. Like I said, you know, if it works or not, you know, if it's heating up or something's not right, you know, kill it, turn it off, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like we said earlier, it's like we don't mind the Hue systems because we did it. So, you know, if there's an issue,
yeah, I know what to fix. I know what to go back to.
Right. So if you did something yourself, you know how to fix it. And it's that there's a little bit, we don't get a warranty with it, but we get like, I know, yeah, like even knowledge. Like, for instance, like I've never done a tile. I've tiled, but I've never done that wet bath. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I also know that if I screw up and there is a leak and I find a leak 6 months from now, I know exactly where everything is. Sure. I know how to access it. You know. I know everything I need to know. And it's not like, oh my God, I gotta, like the situation you're in right now, you're like, I don't know what's under there. Yep. I gotta figure it out. There's a lot of mysteries that you gotta solve to solve the problem.
Yep.
Where I go, oh crap, this is leaking. I know what's up there. I know what's in there. Let me pull this down. I can fix it and literally, you know, knock out 90% of the issue.
Yeah.
You know, just by knowing that I did it myself in the first place. So,
yep. I totally agree. You know, and like I said, in my last place, it was a one level house and I had a crawl space that I could actually get in. And I had, you know, not attic space, but trestle built. So you could, you know, so you could get around in there.
Yeah.
And
that's like this house is. It's one level. I got my basement. I can access both sides super easy.
Yep. So you know where everything is, and you know what, worst case, you punch a hole in the sheetrock to, you know, to find something, to, you know, you can patch it. And whereas here it's two stories, it's built on a concrete slab and you don't have attic access to everything. So there's one section where like my furnaces are, but like for me, like I want to rewire some stuff. I need to get over from that area to over to this side of the house. And it's big and there's a little cutout, but like, I have no idea what's in there. You know, I'm not a small guy. So I'm like, you know, I got to know where I'm going. Like, I'm about to buy a drone to fly it in there with some lights and some cameras to see what's going on. Cause I know it can be done. I'm not worried about it, but it's just how do I do this? The last thing I need to do is put a, you know, a foot through the ceiling.
Yeah.
And it's just that much harder, especially when I know they didn't wire everything properly. This or that. So then I'm sitting there going, well, you know, this is going to be a mess if I'm trying to get, you know, cat cable run for Ethernet room to room or to do this or that, you know, and Wi-Fi is fine for most things. But now all of a sudden we're talking about a Kaleidoscape system that, you know, that really is actually running gigabit. You know, now I need a hardwire run, you know, I need that kind of stuff. And so, you know, trying to figure that out when you're in a house like this that is not as easy to do. There's certain things that I'm like, could I do it? Probably. Would I rather have somebody that does houses like this day in and day out try to figure it out? You know?
Yeah.
Because I have no idea what the builder did. I have no idea, you know, where they ran the stuff and how they did it and, you know, where's the path, because they put all the Ethernet cables, which happens a lot, but in the primary closet. So all these cat cables, everything, the phone jacks, everything's jacked into the closet. But the problem is that's not where I'm going to run all my stuff. You know, and even from there, it's like, yeah, that's not where I'm putting, who puts their router in their closet from that perspective. But that's where, based on this, that's where it should go. So now I'm like, oh, now I got to go run, you know, my router is all the way over here in my office area, which is where in my mind it needs to be. But then now I need to be able to run and to tap and then put a block in the closet so that I can then get all those Ethernet cables. Cause I can't run like all 12 of them over to this closet, or it'd be harder to do, you know, but I can run one from my switch out to there to at least be able to get a couple of rooms wired. You know, or the TV areas, stuff that needs Ethernet so I can tie in a Kaleidoscape or a, or a streamer box or, you know, whatever the need for those are where I really want, you know, good bandwidth. But yeah, no, it's, you know, It's nuts. It's fun, but it's nuts, you know? So
that's what I had mentioned earlier, when I said
What do you got?
Ethernet. So I got the Ring system, but I don't have internet at the house. So I'm doing the cellular because it comes with construction one, right?
Yep. Yeah. The orange ones.
So I'm like, you get 3 gigabits a month to run this thing. And I'm like, we'll see. And then if you go over, I don't know what it's going to take. And I was just like, and my signal's not very strong at that house for doing stuff
on
like
the cellular,
I mean, a phone call, you know, but no problem. So I was like, screw it. I got Starlink. So
very cool.
And I just got the email that it was supposed to ship next week. I bought it yesterday. Okay. It shipped out today. I'm hoping to have it next week. And it was like $120 a month for the service.
Yeah.
And I think you get up to 100 megabits a second. They're saying it's 100%. You know, it doesn't go down. You don't have to worry about your wires going down. And I've been looking at it for a while because when I had Dish Network, we lost power, and it's like, if you lose power for more than 24 hours, your internet will go down because it piggybacks off the electricity. Gotcha. Right. And that used to happen to all my friends. Well, if we lost power for a few days around here, they'd be like, oh, we got nothing. I had Dish Network and a generator, so I'm entertained as hell.
Sure.
Once I went to like streaming everything, you're like, I need internet all the time. How do I get that? So I've been looking at it. And now with the, you know, I'm like, I need it anyways for the construction. I grabbed it, and it's like $90 a month. I think it was $600 for the system.
Sure.
And they ship it out, and it's like $90 a month and no contract. So you can just drop it. Like once I get my internet, if I don't really need it, I can drop it and say we have a huge power outage. I just sign back up and pay my $90 and I've off and running. So, I can't wait to try it out. I can't wait to get it. I'm like, that's a fun thing to play with and see if I get, you know, 100 megabits a second at the house. And, you know, it's just an empty house right now. It's, but it's going to have Wi-Fi.
Love it. No, I mean, realistically, that's one of the first things you got to get set up. You know, it becomes ultra important because even as you're looking at stuff or trying to order stuff or, you know, all those things, you know, realistically require internet. And, you know, cellular works, but in a lot of, I mean, every house I'm in always has issues with, you know, being able to get, you know, good data supported. That's very cool. So yeah, I'd be curious. Tell me
have you seen it or have you heard anybody with it?
Most of where we have here, everybody's gigabit and fiber. So you don't really see a lot of it.
Yeah, I got a gig here, but.
Yeah, so I have not really played with it because there just hasn't been a need for it from that perspective. But I mean, it's crazy how many satellites they're putting up there.
Yeah.
good and bad. It freaks me out a little bit that it doesn't seem like the sky and, you know, and all of that is being policed the same way. Cause it was something like 40% of all satellites are now under Elon or something like that. So it's like,
you really?
I have to check it out before I say that. But you know, but I saw this thing and they were like, because I know he keeps putting them up there, right? And it goes into, but it was like so many of them now are privately owned, and it's like, well, what, you know,
that's what they want to go to. I mean, I know Amazon's trying to do the same thing. They got a system that's coming out in a couple of years.
But then it's like, you know, but what else does that do? How much stuff are we throwing up there? You know, and you know, what happens when they build the Death Star out of it, man?
Yeah, exactly. Well, see, to me, it's redundancy is what I'm always looking for in everything, right? With electricity, you want redundancy. Can you back up? Can you get it from multiple places? Same with internet. Can you get that from multiple places? I mean, if the entire internet goes down, we're all screwed anyways.
Oh, yeah.
So then how do you deal with that? And it's so, And we talked about that earlier about our, like, our lighting systems and stuff. It's like, if the internet goes down, if that all goes down, it goes to kaput.
Certain things.
Does it still work, even though this is a, quote, smart home? So I always look for stuff like that with a redundancy. And this is just another way to do it. That way you're protected. It's like, maybe your area went down, but it's still up and running. All right, I'm good.
Well, so we had, when the storms came up a couple of weeks ago, so we had power went out for, I guess, two and a half days.
Oh, wow.
You know, and we don't lose power too often because, like, you know, I say storm. I can't even say storm, you know, to you. You know what I mean? Like, it's different, right? The wind's blowing. It's raining and thunder and lightning, but it's really not that bad. It's like sunny the next day, you know? And so, but again, it blew my fence down, so it was at least strong. But power goes out, right? So it actually knocked two streets over. It knocked down a big old transformer and, you know.
Yeah.
But we put in, I have solar and I have batteries and didn't even know. You know, I mean, like, all of a sudden I got an alert from we use SMUD, so like PG&E, but SMUD for electricity, saying, hey, your power may have gone out. We saw an outage in this area. We're trying to repair it. Da, da, da. But I'm like, my house works perfectly. You know, all my lights were on, all my stuff was running, my internet, because really your internet doesn't go out. It's just that the box doesn't have power. Right. So my internet was still running. You know, everything was running in the house. You could still stream. You could still do everything. And the house was still charging the batteries during the day. So they charge up during the day. Now it was raining, so it wasn't charging up a whole lot, but it was like, it was enough to carry us through the time. And save my groceries and everything else, because we had the issue the previous year. Again, it's been getting worse. It seems like every year, the last couple of years, but it was like before, like we never, you know, we're not in the woods. We're not, so we never really got impacted by the fires or a lot of this stuff. So we never really had power go out. So 2 years ago, we had again a big section of storms, which was causing outages. And so we lost power for more than 24 hours, four times in like span of 9 months. Yeah. And each time all the food that we had in our like freezer and refrigerator all went bad. You know, I mean, it was just like, you know, 48 hours, you know, 72 hours. It's just, it doesn't last. And, so, you know, each time you lose a couple hundred bucks worth of food, right? And so it was nice to be able to sit there and say, no, look, you know, we still have lights. We still have, we're turning off some of like the porch lights so that like all the neighbors aren't, you know.
Yeah.
Well, they got lights, you know, but yeah, it was nice to be able to have that redundancy, you know, the fact that like, hey, solar's producing energy during the day, even when there's no electrical, it's charging the battery and then the battery is running it when, you know, when the solar is not on. So that it actually gets us going through the night and, you know, and like I said, we got through two and a quarter days, you know, with just the batteries and solar. It was, you know, and nothing awesome. Went bad and nothing went ever, you know, so it was like, and we could still watch TV and do whatever else. And, you know, we just didn't turn, you can't really run your age, you know, if you run your back and stuff like that, you blow through
big
it.
Big amperage you can't pull, but you can get by.
Yeah, but especially nowadays, LED lights and this and that, you know, you're really not pulling. Like, I can watch the house at any given time. And, you know, if we're not running, you know, we watch doing the, you know, washer dryer as well, because that's your other big pull. You know, but I can see, like, I can run the whole house on, like, 1.8 amps. You know, it's really not that bad. You have 14 amps of battery. You know, you're pretty squared away. And then, you know, you just wait till the daytime to run the laundry and whatever else when solar can pick that up. And, I've been pretty happy with it. You know, I think I got to do some training videos on that as well, because again, it's solar. It's a big expense and not everybody fully understands it. And, you know, you listen to the sales guy who loves it and this and that, but you know, they're trying to sell you something. So for me, it's like, you know, you need to understand, well, during the winter, I may be at 50%. So I'm paying for 50% of my electricity, which is still better. And then in the summer, it may be producing 100-110%. You know, but it depends, you know, it's like right now, like the other day I was at 95% one day, but then it was like raining and then and it was like 20-30% because it's just not enough right. sun to get out there and do it. Right.
Yeah, you can't generate enough power.
We know, like, I understand it when you, you know, when I'm thinking about it logically, but when you're putting it up, you're like, well, no, I don't need electricity anymore. And it's like, no, you're not off the grid, you know, or, you know, you need to know how much you can put up to be able to do that. Right. And right now, most of the power companies won't let you go above, you know, 100, 105% of what they assume that you're going to do, what you use, because they don't want it necessarily pumping back to, you know, to them where they have to pay you for it. So the idea is kind of like right there. But like for us, you know, it was a couple in their 70s, you know, with one TV in the house or whatever else. It's like you put that against putting a home theater and, you know, and all the other stuff and this and that. Yeah. You know, I know I'm using a lot more, you know, electricity than they were. So, you know, I'm finding now where it's like, yeah, maybe I needed to put a few more, you know, panels in, or, you know, or then I was like, well, maybe I'll buy another battery. But the problem is,
it's all in the batteries, really.
And you never know what the weather is. Getting through at night and this and that. Yeah. But the problem is, if 2/3 of the year, or let's say half the year, you're not producing enough solar to charge up those batteries, then it's pointless. You know, and so you have to think about that as well, where I'm like, if I can't, there's days like right now where when it's raining or when it was winter, I couldn't charge up those two batteries in the span of a day.
Right.
You know, because it's using that energy to power the house or it's doing this and that. So then I'm like, well, you know, so do I need more panels? Do I need, you know, and it's just tough to figure out what you need in the beginning. You know, otherwise you end up going back to do it, which is probably more expensive.
There's one. It was at CES. R and I were talking about it back in January after CES, and we were like, that I'm looking into for my house. It's a battery system that it sounds similar to yours, very much like on that line where it'll like it, you can connect it to your solar, but you don't have to have solar. You can, it gets integrated it into your system. From
the wall. Yeah.
So it keeps itself charged, but you can program it so that it's actually your house during the peak hours is running off the battery. Yeah. So you're saving money because you can pull when it's cheaper.
So, so it's recharging itself at midnight. Yeah. And then it's,
and like you're out in California, you see all the stuff like, oh, don't do anything, at, you know, in the summer,
four to nine or whatever else.
Yeah. Yep. So they have, that's what these systems are for. You can have them programmed. So people are drawing it. It makes the draw on the electric companies easier. It's like, it makes you have some redundancy. You lose power, this one will run. If you had, I think the one I'm looking at, you can run for 3 days, but you could add batteries to it to run for 30.
Yeah.
And it, and again, like you said, you're not doing your, you're not running high amperage stuff, but your house is running normally. You're not in the dark.
I can keep my internet on and some TV for keeping people busy. Yeah. Then, you know, you got a happy household.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I'm looking at it. And it's like my electrician, I was showing him and he goes, see, you're up to like the one I was looking at. It was a beefier one. So it was like $7,500. And he goes, you're up into the whole home price range. Cause I'm also installing a regular generator, a plug so that if I want to run the beefy stuff, I just fire this thing up and I can run my house. Right. Yeah. He goes, why don't you just get the whole home one, like a propane power? And I go, because it doesn't do the whole home one doesn't do this stuff. It doesn't do the integration. It doesn't do the, you know, it's not like a, this is like a whole home UPS system. Yeah. Nothing ever, like the big Generac generators, the house will shut down, flicker and come right back on.
Sure.
This is like nothing ever happened.
Yeah. Nothing ever happened
for anything. Yep. You know, for the things that it's connected to,
right? Whatever it's doing.
Yep. Right. But there's so, and that's today. 10 years from now, it'll be even better, you know, battery technology and stuff. But
yeah, I mean, battery definitely has a long way to go, and you know, and a lot of this stuff. And always a big discussion points for, you know, for people. Oh. But I'm like, you know, but it's moving in the right direction, you know, and that's really what it's looking at, right? You know, is how do you do this stuff? I mean, you can take, you know, some of the new trucks, you know, and the bigger vehicles, you can use that to power your house. You know, you use the battery from your car, you know, to power your house because it's got, you know, 14, 20 plus amperes in it, you know, the same as the batteries do, you know. And so I think that stuff's cool, right? You know, now, yes, are you depleting your car so you can't drive it? I get it. But chances are it's not your only vehicle or your, you know, you got to figure those things out, right? Do you have solar? Do you have, you know, but the idea that all these things can back up and support each other,
right?
Make it so that things like outages and other problems don't affect things as much. That, you know, when people talk about, the grid can't support everybody having an EV. I understand that. But you know what? If you have solar on your house, it can.
Right.
You know, so, if you're, it all just depends on how you're doing it. Right. So I'm not saying, obviously, you know, I'm a big ICE guy as well. And, you know, and I like my cars to have a growl to them. I understand all those pieces, but I'm like, yeah, you know, I got no problem with it. My daughter's got her little EV and, you know, and it works great. And same thing, even those have the computers. So you can tell it to only charge at night. You know, so that you're not charging during peak time. So you can even plug it in so you don't have to go back outside. Plug it in at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when you're in prime time.
Right.
You know, and it won't turn on until 10 o'clock because that's when, you know, power goes back down cost wise. You get these trucks that can plug in and power your house and then you have backup batteries and, you know, and you throw some solar with that to recharge those batteries so that you can take your truck out the next day.
Yeah.
I like the idea of not being, you know, it's not about being off the grid necessarily, but I like the idea of being self-reliant enough that if power goes out, you know, like for me, you know, like you're working on cars, you could technically, you need light, but now you're outside.
But I have a generator.
I can't do my job.
I use a generator at work.
Well, and fair enough, right? So, but like, I can't do my job without power. You know, if I don't have internet, I don't have this and that. I can't create my training videos. I can't create, you know, any of the stuff. I can't program systems. I can't, you know, all those things require a household up and running. You know, I can do without the AC, you know, I can, run a fan, you know, like I'm fine with that stuff. If I have to throw on a blanket in the winter and do whatever, you know, but yeah, you know, my job revolves around internet and, you know, and screens and laptops and everything like that. And so, yeah, if I can keep up and running, you know, even if the power's out, then, you know, that's money for me, right? You know, that's business, that's my whatever else. You know, so man, it's fun to see all this stuff. And I think it's, some of it's still a little high price now. Some of it's come down, like lighting's come down a lot in the last 5-10 years. But yeah, I think 5-10 years from now, you're going to start seeing it in a lot more houses. Same thing as solar, same thing as backup, you know, battery generators and things like that. It's just, it's too easy of a thing to add in to not want it, you know, and,
absolutely.
You know, here it's like, hey, we get sunshine 11 months out of the year. So it's great for solar, but even in areas where you don't and it's storming, yeah, why wouldn't I want a battery backup? Even if I'm paying electricity to charge it. I can charge it in off hours. Why wouldn't I want that backup? So if power goes out, it's not freezing in the middle of the winter or, you know, older people don't have issues with the health. And, you know, you see all these problems where, you know, X people died because there was a heat wave or there was a, you know, a cold snap. And it's just like, does it have to happen? You know, it's only happening because there's no power for 2 or 3 days. You can blame the power companies, but it's like, you know, we're dealing with failing infrastructure. It's a much bigger discussion than.
Yeah, it's not. When we lose power here, I love hearing the people. I'm not paying for this. No kidding. They want to get you power. They charge you by the amount you use. If you're not using it, they're not charging you.
They're not paying
for it. They want to get you power more than you want it. Trust me.
There you go.
So funny.
So, yeah. Well, it sounds like you've got it all going on your house. So as always, if I can help you with any thought process, let me know. I'm definitely deep into my projects as well. So.
I know. Thanks for taking some time.
Yeah. So, and I've got, like I said, I'm trying to get some content out right now for Fecnatics. So like I said, I'll have some stuff up in the next little bit. So, definitely take a look. It's always on there and some good information, I think.
We're still going to visit with Tony, my buddy Tony.
Yeah.
I talked to him maybe a month ago. But yeah, when things settle down and I get an opportunity to organize three people, we'll get that thing going.
We'll get it going, too. Man. I appreciate that.
That's going to be great.
We'll have some fun with that. And And you know, I'm always happy to hop on. So, yeah. You know, like I said, we could talk about house stuff. We could talk about theater stuff. We can talk about car stuff.
Buddy, we can talk about anything.
I took off. So I'm changing out the vinyl stripes on the vet. Because they were getting old and dirty. And, you know, I mean, it was just, I'm used to having things painted and not vinyl striped.
Not striped. But, yeah.
You know, So it was turning, and they say it's like, you know, the little acid rain and all the stuff as it gets onto the stuff. And, you know, not that my vet has ever seen rain.
Yeah.
That's an important thing when people are both, yep. Never been in the rain. Okay.
Yeah.
But you know, I had never pulled vinyl off of a car before.
Oh.
You know, and so, but it was pretty easy. You know, I had a heat gun on mm-hmm. lower setting. You know, no damage to the car never even really got that hot, but it was enough yeah. that it, you know, it took a little bit of time, but got it all peeled off. And then, I had ordered, so I still got to put them on, but that's the next step. And that's what I'm more, you know, pulling it off. You could always just pull another tear.
You can't screw up. All you gotta, the worst that happens, you get some residue left behind, which is easy to get off.
You just clean it off. Yeah.
I got some pictures for you. This was a paint job I had to do. I'll show you sometime at probably when Tony's on. Somebody did a pinstripe job on up the front of a, factory five car and it was awful. And they brought me in to straighten it out. I have the pictures of it, but it's like, if you don't get those lines right, it's like most people don't know, but like Tony and I were looking at it like, what the F happened here? And we're like, the guy had owned the car for like, I think a year or so. And he finally was just like, I got to get this fixed. And Tony's like, I got a guy, don't worry. Yeah. But it was bad. If I had the time, I'd pull the pictures up right now for you because it's pretty funny. It's like, how did somebody think that was a professional paint job?
Yeah.
Like on a car. It was an offset stripe. It was a gold. what's the, I'm being real stupid. What's the car that Factory 5 makes it? And it's got the Shelby.
Cobra. Yeah.
The Cobra, the original, right? So it was a gold Cobra and it had offset black pinstripe. Over and down the back, right? Like, you know, with a roll cage behind him.
Yep.
So it was right up through there. And it was two stripes. One was probably, if I had to say, it was probably like 3 inches thick. And then the one next to it was probably like an inch.
Yeah.
And the way they did it, it just.
They lost each other and everything.
It was like when they went down the back side, it didn't match. When it didn't match on the hood. Where the hood didn't line up. So it got to like, you know, like the hood comes up, but then you have that grill piece behind the hood that's part of the body.
Yeah.
Those didn't line up. So it was like, he did it off. It was like, so I had to come back in and I had to redo everything and get it all into a line, but try not to do it because you don't want to have to redo the gold. So I had to refatten the blacks because that's the easier one to match, but then still put it on because it's all buried. Yeah, so you got to put the clear coat on and do all that, but striping isn't easy. When you're doing it in vinyl, it's like you got a little bit, but then you got to deal with the bubbles and you got to make sure you.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, and I don't vinyl a lot, so I love learning this stuff. Mm. I'm like, so I bought laser cut stripes. I mean, that's the beauty of the stuff nowadays, right? Like, you're not cutting a stripe by hand and trying to keep a straight edge. Like, it's laser cut. And it's laser cut to the exact measurements of what the other one should be. And you still kind of have the guideline of the last one because it's cleaner where the vinyl was.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm like, well, do I polish the whole thing or do I actually use that as a, you know, drawing line? But
yeah, don't put wax down because then you're going to ruin your adhesion.
Yep. So I'm like, okay. So, you know, if I can use that. So I know the lines are right on there, but then, you know, can I get it with the bubble? Can I do this and that, you know? And it's so we'll see, but I figured, you know, I forget what I paid for the stripes, but it was like 60, 80 bucks. I mean, they weren't that expensive for, you know, like if I get to learn, if I can do it and it looks golden, perfect. Good. If not,
buy another set.
Exactly. But I'm like, you know, but it's worth it for me to try. And then I know that I can do it. Right. And so, And I put my, although not always perfectly, but like I put my numbers on when I hit the track, you know, same thing, vinyl adhesion numbers on the yep. glass, but they're small. You know, you're not talking about a couple feet trying to get it perfect, but no, you know, it should be fun. So I got all of the, stripes taken off. Car looks totally different without all the stripes on there. And then I've got, so mine is just a big white stripe across the center that goes across. Yep. And then the Grand Sport marks, which are just
the red on the fenders. Yeah.
Yep. So we'll see, but they needed to be refreshed. The paint looks great. The inside looks great. But the stripes did not. So it's like, okay, you know, it's worth it. I'll try it myself once. If I jack it up, I'll have somebody else do it. But like I asked a guy, like a vinyl and a window guy. So I'm like, what are you going to charge me, you know, to pull the stripes off and to re-put on new ones? I have the new ones. And he goes, $600 to $800 each way. So, you know, he wanted $600 to take them off. So I was like, even if I paid you to put the stripes on, I can, you know, I'll take them off. That saves me $600 to $800.
Right.
And then I'm like, you know, if the stripes are less than $100, then I'll try to put them on myself before I, you know.
Exactly.
You know, I'd rather screw up and pay 20% more, you know, but I tried it than, you know, than just to pay it up.
Yeah. Risk reward there is huge. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but yeah, I was like, wow, that's a lot for just some stripes. But, you know, but then that's what they're charging for
the
windows.
It's the time. It really is the time. And it's like, and again, like you said, like, why you want, like, go to your videos. Like, is this too hard for you? Like, you see in the video and you'll be like, wow, okay, that's why he gets that kind of money. And it's like,
Well, and that's where I could easily see, like, hey, pull the stripe off yourself. Have somebody else put the stripe on.
Exactly.
But you still saved half the money, or you still did this or that. So, you know, I think there's ways to be in there where it's like, yeah, you know, I know there's a maybe even better than 50-50 shot that I'm going to do this, screw it up, and be like, no, somebody else can put it on. Because especially if I end up selling it at the end of the day, I need these stripes to be perfect, right? I don't want to be thrown on there. Somebody's going to take off $1,000 because there's some bubbles in my stripes that, you know, so saving a couple $100 doesn't really help me out at that point. So,
yeah.
Oh. But always fun,
man. All right. Yeah. Thanks. It was funny. This is one of our shorter ones, buddy.
This is one of our shorter ones. So, you know, but like I said, I am always happy to hop on long chat, which it usually is, but long chat or short chat, always fun. And we haven't even really talked home theater or anything else. So, you know, like I said,
no, we talked today, a little bit.
That's what it's all about. So
that's what I like. Take over Tuesdays.
So, yeah. So hopefully, like I said, next time I got my lighting and shading, you know, is kind of my first thing here. And then I'm going to plan out and finish planning out a little bit of the theater. And then my hope is that through summer, I'll get the theater basically built because I want to have some stuff that I can actually show during Cedia. So, you know, that I can have some video of and things like that. So, cool. That should be a blast. And then awesome. Are you coming out to Cedia this year or what are you doing?
Yep. I'll be at Cedia again.
Okay. Yep. We'll have some stuff. I'm figuring out some plans right now. So,
awesome.
We'll make sure you get invited to whatever and any booths and anything that we got going on and things I'm working on. You know, we'll get you included.
Looking forward to it. Can't wait. And I'll be talking to you probably very soon in days, probably about lighting and stuff. Cause especially as I get going with the electrician for walkthroughs and stuff and
let me know
what I can do.
And anything you need is always, I'm more than happy to answer any questions in there. And then, I'll shoot you over as I start in the next couple of weeks here, as these first videos start filtering out.
Yeah.
You know, I'll make sure you have them so you can show them if you want to share them with anybody. You know,
feel free, always
appreciated. But yeah, you know, like I said, good information for people in there. Outside of just home theaters, I do think.
Yeah.
Outside of just home theaters. So.
Exactly. All right.
Okay, my friend. I will catch you later on. A pleasure as always.
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you. And everybody else, you know what you got to do.
Go push play.
What he said.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production.
with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.